This episode of the Inside Running Podcast is proudly brought to you by New Balance. The global athletic leader is proud to introduce a new premium stability shoe within their Fresh Foam X range, the Vongo V5. The Vongo V5 builds upon the success of the perfectly cushioned 1080 version 11 with the addition of an innovative stability solution designed for the perfect blend of support and softness. The Fresh Foam Vongo V5 is available now at select retailers and www.newbalance.com.
Pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Under the cover of my skin.
Welcome to episode number 199 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Not too big of a show this week compared to last week. Last week was a big one, but looking forward to having your attention, streaming, downloading the show for this week's episode. Welcome to my co-host down in Anglesey, Julian Spence. How are you going?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
That's good. And welcome to my other co-host, Bradley Croker. Welcome to this week's episode.
Thanks, Brady. How are you?
Yeah, good, thanks. Just saying off air, it's the first time we've recorded with the video on. I'm a bit thrown early on, but it's good to see your faces, boys.
I'm a bit the same, actually.
I thought it would be okay.
It was your idea, Brad.
Are we going to turn the videos off then?
Feels real awkward. Yeah, can we? You can't do something 198 ways one certain way. I'm going to water. I'm struggling with this video turned on. You're too good looking, Brad.
Video's off.
We can leave them on. I think I'm... Oh, okay. We're turning them off. Boys, what's been happening? Julian, tell me first up, what's been happening down your way?
Well, recently, over the weekend, obviously, Regional Vic went back into lockdown. So, closed the store halfway through the day and go back into lockdown protocol, which is, I think it's, sixth or seventh time we've done that now? Maybe the seventh time Regional's gone in. We got the protocols down now. We sort of know what to do, and doesn't make it any less enjoyable or in the days or hours leading up any less anxious about what's going to happen. The unpredictability is just the worst of it. But
you knew it was coming though and prepared for it?
Yeah, well, I think I'm not sure whether I said on here, but I was saying to everyone else, we feel like we're on borrowed time the whole time. Like it was just a bonus that we could open. And we kind of took it like that. Like every day we were open was just a bonus. So now we're closed like everyone else.
Yeah, well, a lot of people in the same boat, including Brad Croker. How's your week of lockdown been, Croaks?
Not too bad. Like I was pretty down in the dumps at the start of the week, like when we recorded last week. But then we sort of teed up to interview Sinead and then organised to interview Pat Tin and later in the week. So that sort of got me up and about a little bit, just knowing that there's a little bit more purpose to the week. And now I'm sort of settled into lockdown life. So you sort of forget what day it is after a while. But, no complaints from here. From my end, I'm not really doing any sessions. I'm just sort of running, and I'll probably do that for another week and then look at starting back again with maybe a bit more structure.
Probably done you good to have a bit of a break as well.
Yeah, it's been good.
Just to reset a bit. Well, you want to tell us about your running week? Start from Monday.
Yeah. All right. So Monday, 45 minutes, 4:17s. Tuesday, I did an hour. Got rolling a little bit towards the end, like a few sort of 3:50s. So 4:06 average there for an hour. Still kept up my midweek long run on the Wednesday. So that was 20K, 4:05s. Then had a couple of lighter days, 45 minutes on the Thursday at 4:14s, 60 minutes on the Friday at 4:19s, Saturday 45 minutes at 4:17s, and then Sunday because I decided that I was going to have 2 weeks of jogging, I thought, well, I may as well just not do a super long run and just cut that back a bit as well. But I think the fact that I had like a pretty easy week, I got rolling pretty early on this run, so it ended up turning into a bit of a long run with like a bit of tempo at the end. Like I reckon the last 6 or 7K were probably mid 3:40s. So I did 90 minutes at 3:58 average. So that was definitely a solid run. So my week total was 103, and like technically we're meant to only exercise an hour a day, but my total week was 7 hours and 9 minutes. So some days I ran for 45 minutes, but then made it up with two longer runs on a Wednesday and a Sunday. So
hang on, you just put your own formula into this. So
what's that?
Are you saying an hour a day is the same as 7 hours over the week?
No, well, yeah, well, I guess it's... You're allowed to exercise for 7 hours a week.
Not sure how it flies with the restrictions, though.
No, but anyway, so yeah, I'm going to jog again this week, and then I think from next week, I might do a light session late this week, but next week I'm just going to go back into a bit of a base phase where just do some, like, mile reps off minute recoveries that aren't too quick, like sort of similar to what I did that session I did with Ellie late last year, where we did five or six by a mile off a minute, where you know you're running 3:15s to 3:20s, and it's a long session, it's a longish session, but it's not super taxing in terms of intensity. So I'm going to do a fair bit of that sort of stuff over the next few months, because I can't see any races happening this year, so I may as well just build a bit of a base and see what happens early next year. Hopefully there'll be some track races in Sydney.
Will you do any strides?
Yeah, actually that's one good point. I'm going to start doing some hill strides once a week, just like 10 to 15 seconds, and flat strides once a week as well, just to keep a little bit of turnover there. Also want to start just doing a little bit more activation and home, like, well, obviously the gyms are closed here at the moment, a bit more activation and gym work. So yeah, as much as it sort of sucked when we all went into lockdown, I've just changed the goalposts a bit and reassessed, and yeah, looking forward to getting back into it next week.
Yeah, you can just tell by your voice, like, you were pretty filthy even behind the scenes like this time last week.
Yeah, it was like my season ended with Deke's quarters, like that was the end of the season. And then it's like but sometimes it's good to take 2 weeks of just jogging. Like, I'm certainly not going to lose any fitness running 100K a week for 2 weeks, especially with a little bit of up-tempo running on a couple of times a week.
Yeah, that's probably good for you, just getting out, clearing the head, go back inside. Yep.
Yeah, so I'm in a good spot.
Good. Moose, what have you been doing? You in a good spot?
I don't know. I mean, I feel mentally I'm pretty happy with where I'm at. I've been down long enough to get used to it. That's how I would put it.
You mean injury down?
Injury down, like, okay. Running down, that kind of thing. Like, that's what I mean. So this week was I'm so good at having two contrasting halves to my weeks, which isn't a good thing. So on the Monday, I ran with Sugar down in Janjuk. So we ran out to Bowles, and on this day, it was they have like a big wave contest that's on call all the time. So a bunch of locals get voted into a contest. That's like the Bowles 50-year storm contest. It's a big wave event, and it's pretty much on standby at all time. And when the surf gets big enough, they get like a call and say, hey, the contest is on today. So they all rock down and surf a big wave contest. And
death on a stick out there, mate.
Well, what happens if they got jobs?
They you rock up for this one. They all do have jobs. So Tim Stevenson, he was a guy that is from Janjuk. So he was sort of my age growing up, and he was he won something, maybe the best ride of the day or something. And he worked the whole night before. And there was a lady who won the best performance or something like that. But so we ran out to Bells, and we kind of caught a bit of it. It was really cool to watch. So the trail, I'm not sure whether you've ever run it, but it goes along the cliffs from Torquay up to Bells Beach. It's one of like the all-time runs. There's a fun run on it called the Bells Bash. Most people would have been on it at some point if they've been down in Torquay. And yeah, it was just a really cool day to go running because the surf was so big.
Is that the track that goes near the tiger snake like spot?
Oh, so that's probably another 5 or 6K along the coast. And then you drop down into like the Ironbark Basin. That's at the bottom of a thing called the Ironbark Basin. So it's not really on the same trail, but it's on the same cliff. It's just along the cliffs a little further.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, that was good. Went to the gym after it and then had a sauna. So got back in the sauna at this RACV. It was pretty fun. I'm big on the sauna. A little bit of heat stress helps the fitness when you're not running as much. And Tuesday was running up before I went to Ballarat. So let me click. I've sort of got my thing set up a bit different. So I ran just a couple of loops of my favorite flat loop. There's not a lot of flat loops in Anglesey, so this was as flat as I could get. 13K, I ran about an hour. Listened to Inside Jogging podcast. They mentioned us on it. I think they do it so that they hope we listen and mention them, and it's worked because I'm mentioning them.
Was that the one where they were talking about Croaks is the best looking one on this show?
No, they didn't say that.
Yeah, they did. They were talking about how good his hair is and stuff.
I might start listening.
Fucking hell.
Because the guy with the bleached hair, he thinks he's more like Croker. That's how it come up.
Hey, that bloke he has a low IQ.
clearly not like me then.
Clousy seems bored as fuck the whole time. Just not interested. And the other bloke just tries to wind him up by telling him that they're stupid at training and they run.
Heart rates are too high.
Yeah. It's sort of similar to this show, I guess.
That's what happens when you pretty much rip off our name and format. But it's good people talking about running.
Hey, and we just give them a plug, didn't we?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Send us a slab of beers, boys.
Next morning on the Wednesday, I did a threshold down in Ballarat. So I ran the lake, ran with Watto. This one was the heart rate. It was 4 by 6 minutes. So there weren't very long intervals, but I needed just a medium workout after I did that 10K time trial on the weekend before. So I did 4 by 6 minutes, 90 seconds jog between. Heart rates were 159, 168, 170, 172, which is pretty normal over a progression of intervals when you're running at thresh. Like there's just a lag period early on before you reach threshold. And so on the fourth rep, you get there really quickly and stay there. So that's why I'm actually averaging my actual threshold, whereas the other ones I'm not quite. But the paces were pretty good. So I ran 3:13, 3:18, 3:16, 3:13. And that's a lot better.
It's more like 4 by 6 minutes at 10K pace, isn't it?
I'm going to heart rate, big fella.
Yeah, I know. I'm just stirring. Yeah. But you ran 10K. Your heart rate's improved a lot in
tell me what days? I should do. Should I not run the heart rate?
No, that's good. It's good. So your 10K wasn't all out then?
Throw a barb in. Now you're going to go crawl back, pick it up and get the fuck out.
Threshold reps are normally what? Roughly 60 minute pace, but you ran a 10K.
Threshold ain't a pace, brother. It's a heart rate.
Yeah, okay. But you ran, but relatively, like this is flat. Where you did your 10K was flat. So 175, that's pretty solid. That's pretty high heart rate, isn't it? For threshold.
About it. It's about what I sit at for most of the time. I reckon if you go back to look at my threshold that I did a couple of weeks ago, I ran 175 and averaged 334s, I reckon.
What was your heart rate for the time trial? Did you wear it?
I think I did, actually.
I can look that up while you keep talking.
Have a look, because I reckon, well, let's see if it got much higher than 175.
It did.
I like this argument.
It did.
179, maybe?
Didn't you pace for the first half of it?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, okay. I had a negative split, so you got to give me some points there.
Here we go, 32.16. And the heart rate average was 174.
Yeah, that's an average too. So that would have been like 4K of getting up there and then just way over. Take that.
Was it 180 at 6K in?
Exactly, right? 10K effort. 10K effort's a lot higher than 175.
Yeah.
I bet it didn't drop much from that.
No, it only kept climbing, but it pretty much stayed at the same spot.
Yeah, so I'm good with my
pressure. I guess as well, like, yeah, 6-minute reps aren't that long and 90-second recovery is decent. Like, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And 6-minute reps aren't that long. Like, but geez, fucking had a good one for once. It's been a while, boys. Come on. Give us a bumper.
Sorry, mate.
Give us a This is bullshit.
I thought it was good that you're in front of Watto. I liked your description. I wasn't having a go at you. I was just sitting back listening.
It was more, you've got to admit, it's a pretty impressive turnaround from, like, you know, a few days earlier where you're running. So what you ran for your 6-minute reps, it was basically your 10K pace, but your heart rate's a hell of a lot lower than it was, you know. Yeah. So, yeah.
Crow, like I said to Watto when he was wondering what was wrong with him, you're running with a 214 bloke, Ash. It made him feel a whole lot better. Just like if we went running, Croaks, I'd remind you, hey, just don't try to push it. You're running with a 214 bloke. Anyway. Yeah, anyway, that's the end of me being up and about. Because my week went real downhill after this. So that afternoon, I was booked in to get this PRP injection, which turned around real quick, actually. So I had the appointment on Monday, then got the referral Monday night, called up Tuesday. They said, come in tomorrow. So I went in Wednesday arvo, and PRP is like they take your blood out, they spin it, they grab the platelets the platelets like rise to the top after they spin it, and then they re-inject that concentrated blood, like the platelet concentrate, back into your joint or your tendon or wherever you're sore, with the idea that it helps healing. So I was sitting on the bed in between my blood getting taken and them spinning it, and I was like, oh, I wonder how long this takes to come back from, like. I actually hadn't asked anyone. I just assumed it was like a cortisone injection. And then I sent a message firstly to Ali. I said, oh, how long should I have off? And she's like, oh, this can sometimes be like 4 to 5 days. You can't really do anything for a week. And I was like, fucking hell, this is not what I want. I just had the best workout in 6 months this morning. I was seriously trying to find a way out of the clinic in between them taking my blood and them putting it back in. But I basically locked in there, and I was just really disappointed when I heard that, because I was going okay. And I remember finishing the workout that morning going, gee, my knee actually feels pretty bloody good. Best it's felt in ages. So I ended up getting this jab, and I messaged my doctor. He sort of said, yeah, it's kind of like a cortisone, but worse. So give it an extra day or so. Probably a little bit more, flexible than what Ali said, and I took off Thursday, Friday, and on Saturday I jogged 20 minutes, Sunday I jogged 40 minutes, and yeah, it just feels like it's flared up a bit. It feels like the injections actually made it a little angrier. I just get the pain a little sharper, it comes on a bit earlier, it doesn't really go away after I finish running like it has been doing. So
that could have that impact.
Yeah, it says it might flare up sometimes. You just it doesn't, the problem, well, not the problem, but one of the things with this injection is what I've been reading. It says it might, you might not notice a difference from like, for like 2 to 3 months. And so you're never going to know if that's like the thing that it worked or not, or whether it was the gym work I've been doing for 2 months, because that's how long gym work takes to kick in. So if I'm smashing the gym for 2 months and I start feeling better, I'll probably give credit to that, where it might be the PRP as well. Who knows? I don't know. 5 days now. I ran today, did some gym, doesn't feel great. I'm just hoping it gets better. That's what I'm hoping. Just gradually starts improving. I got to, actually Wednesday I meet the surgeon. So I go up to Melbourne, have an appointment with the surgeon. His name's Julian Faller. He's one of the best one of the best regarded knee surgeons in the country. So
does
we're
he
just
do
gonna...
footballers? Is that where I've heard him from?
He would. He's pretty much the leader, I believe. In orthopedic surgeon, yeah. So
you
he's going
to pull some strings to get in this guy. Pretty
well. No, I just got a. He just basically got an appointment come through a text message saying you booked in to see the surgeon on Wednesday. This Julian Fowler pressed yes to confirm, and I was like, okay, yes, but I reckon it's going to cost me a fortune just for a chat. We will see. Hopefully not.
He looks like a smart guy. Just looking at the photos of him.
Yeah, I had a read through like his resume and stuff. And he's done some shit. I like that.
Okay. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Oh, the same guy's written an article on him who did that Stewie article, Conrad Marshall.
Oh, yeah?
Remember that big... Yeah,
yeah.
4 years ago, this guy has done a piece on him as well about how he saves people's sporting careers.
So, Moose, how long will you give this... Like, when would you make the call about surgery?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna have to talk to him. I don't know. It's the ideal time to get it, to have surgery, because of the baby coming, the no races, all that stuff. However, there's horror stories of guys getting cartilage taken out and then being arthritic really soon, down like in the future, because they got no cartilage left. So. Yeah, I'm going to ask him all these things, of course.
Good luck with that. Kicked off my week 50 minutes at 4:25 pace Monday morning, double in the afternoon. Just did 6K, 4:28 pace. Nothing to really report there. Archie and I met up for a workout on Tuesday morning. We did 5 by 4 minutes at about 3-minute K pace with 90 seconds jogging between. And then we did 4:30 seconds pretty hard at the end of that with 60 seconds jog between, just to work on that kind of, yeah, faster pace, kind of averaging like 2:40 pace. Not sure how accurate that is in 30 seconds, but a good little workout, 32 minutes. Working a couple of different systems there. So really enjoyed that one. Good to still be able to train with one other person and, yeah, tick things off. In the afternoon, got out for 6.3K again at 4:27 pace on Wednesday, did 90 minutes. That was before you and I interviewed Sinead Bradley, and I'm just looking at some of these comments here. You were accusing me of being a bit of a name dropper because I said I was interviewing her later on in the afternoon there. But that was good. Got out for that. Thought of some questions while I was jogging out there for 90 minutes. Afternoon jog of 8K at 4:22s. 10K easy in the morning and in the afternoon on Thursday. That was a day at home with Hudson. It was some good weather. I was starting to get some like 18, 19 degree days up here in Atucamoama, so enjoyed that in the afternoon. And then I did some surges Friday morning. Did 12K and then just did like 6 20-second surges before work. I was one of those ones where I just, you know, when you sometimes do strides and you can't be bothered like changing your shoes over and taking like the extra 2 minutes that takes. So I just did them during my run in the last couple of Ks, which I can't hit the same pace I would usually when I've got the lighter shoes on. But it's a good way. These were kind of like half-ass strides, I suppose, is what I'm trying to say here. Got out for 10K in the afternoon, Friday night as well. And then Saturday was my workout of the week, kind of marathon-specific one. I did a mile under marathon pace, so at about 3:10 kilometre pace, which is about 5 minutes for the mile, and then a mile kind of float at 325 K pace, which I think was about 525, 530-ish for the mile, and did that seven times. Archie did the first five with me, but he was doing 3 minutes with me at 310 pace and then kind of kicking down the last 2 minutes, and then I'd kind of catch him in the float. So it was good to have company for the first, yeah, what was he? He was there for like the first 16K. My session ended up being like 22.4K. It was good. Heart rate data was good. Paces was good. A bit warmer again. Felt a bit warmer out there getting in the sun. I think it was like 16 degrees by the time we finished. That would have been 7 weeks out from Melbourne. So a good little workout. Got that off Clousy, actually, Moose, your mate you were just talking about before. He kind of
said, what, mile on, mile off?
Yeah, I asked him what are some of his good marathon workouts. He suggested doing this like nine times, doing it for like 28 or 30K, but I don't want to.
Molly Seidel mentioned that in Moose's interview as well.
Did she?
Ali, yeah, did this workout in the...
Clousy probably gave it to all of them. So Ali, Moose.
Clousy's pinched this and claimed it.
Clousy Fartlek.
Do they go all the way to 30K?
Ali's was like 36 or something.
36K of mile on, mile under, mile over. Or did she do like a 10K warm-up beforehand?
No, I'm pretty sure it was like...
No, you couldn't do that with 36K.
It was a lot. Yeah, you can. I think it was... I'm pretty sure it was 10 of them. So 20 of them, 32K.
Yeah.
Stop pulling him down, Moose. Here he is thinking he just banged out an awesome session and you basically told him he's done the little boy session.
Got to do another 10K worth of it.
Yeah. No, well, you're probably going faster than marathon pace.
Yeah, I was. I was working on, I reckon I'm working on 3:17 for me marathon pace. So I went 7 seconds under, 7 seconds over.
You're faster than that though.
What's 3:17 is like 2:18, isn't it? 2:17. That's like Croix's pace.
Yeah, but like everything you're doing lately is like faster and
if I was certain I actually had a marathon coming up, I might be a bit more ambitious with the sessions and the speeds I'm going.
But you're still training for a marathon.
Yeah, the Miami marathon. Yeah, going to do a time trial.
Are you really?
I think I'm going to, yeah. I like having purpose in my life, and I think if I have a time trial booked in, I think it could be something good and fun to do.
Yeah, I don't know about a marathon.
If you asked me 12 months ago, I'd be like, no, that's a bit silly.
You know
like,
why he wants to do it?
Back.
You know why he wants to do it, Moose?
Australia kudos.
He knows that Echuca and Moama is quite friendly on the GPS. And put it in his Instagram bio and tell us he's got the fastest marathon PB on the podcast.
Do you reckon have a go at 2:14, Brad? That's a bit ambitious, I reckon.
Well, why not?
You do it at the industrial estate for sure.
No. I'll do it on the same course that I did that half marathon on. Two turns per 10K.
Exactly.
That was legit as that one last year, remember?
Behind a bus.
Yeah, I'll get the bus out, get the trucks out, get bikes out, drink stations.
You don't have anything to lose if you're going to do it. I mean, if you...
Exactly.
If it's blow gone, up, I'll just pull. If you run 2:13, it doesn't count.
And if I'm not on 2:14 pace at 32K, I'll just walk off. Or I'll just stay as long as I can at 2:14 pace and then put on Strava that I could have held that till the end.
I like it.
It's not a bad idea. Well, I've got a like, baby same as you, Moose. Baby due in December. So, you know, I'm not going to be doing much in Jan, Feb, March with two kids and one of those kids being a newborn. I'm fairly fit at the moment. I'm getting an iron infusion next Monday, Croaks. I'm doing all this training at the moment off a ferritin score at 35. Imagine what happens when they pump
35?
It out.
35?
Yeah.
That's within the range.
That's not that bad.
35, yeah, I have to be under 30 to get the iron infusion from the hospital, but they can do it a bit lower at this other clinic nearby. 35 is pretty low.
Yeah, not really.
Bullshit, yeah. 35 is pretty low.
As long as you're within the range, the number that doesn't necessarily matter. Yeah. It shows that you've got enough.
Distance runners shouldn't be at 35.
Yeah, no, there's a different range for athletes, surely.
Yeah. Don't you say 50, Moose? Isn't that your made-up range?
Well, from what I've seen, like I've seen performance start dropping at 30 for sure. Mm. Probably over 30 is when I've seen athletes start complaining about being tired and wondering what's wrong with them.
Yeah.
And if you're doing that, then your performance is dropping.
Yeah. So I'm doing this off performance dropping crooks. Imagine when I'll do a bit of surgery, me boy.
But your performance is not dropping.
No, it's not, exactly.
You're not complaining about any fatigue and your sessions are good. So
I think maybe I've just been tired for so long.
I think this iron infusion is going to be placebo for you.
Oh, yeah. Tell you what, I'm going to run fast once this iron infusion happens. So that's another reason to do it.
I'm with Brad on this. If you're not noticing it, then it's probably not a problem.
Yeah, we'll see.
But go and get it. Go and get it if it makes you feel better.
Make you feel better. Just know the numbers are right. Yeah, because usually I find I fade at the end of workouts. That's when I've noticed it in the past. But I haven't been doing that recently. But, yeah.
Maybe you're pacing them better too.
Yeah, getting it right. Someone's bird's going off there. The birds are getting excited about the marathon trial.
Cedric's up and about. He found his squeaky toy.
Oh. Anyway. David. So that was a good workout, I like that. Thanks, Clousy, for sending that one through. Good work inventing that workout. Got 5K warm-up and cool-down done there as well. So that was like 32K morning, which I like doing these things on Saturday mornings because it keeps me off the beers Friday night, gives me something to do on a Saturday morning during lockdown. And it also, this was an interesting one because Archie had already finished and cooled down. So I was like 500 metres from my house. So I jogged to my house to get my headphones. And I was just like endorphins going off, kind of feeling pretty good about myself because I've done a workout, nice sunny day, thinking I'm going to do a marathon time trial in a couple of months. And then when I went home to get my headphones, Carly told me how regional Victoria had gone into lockdown, which like cooks us for school, like changed my job massively. And also that like New South Wales had like 850 cases. And I'm like, oh, I wish I didn't know that because it just impacts my mental health like so dramatically. So now I'm like stop and checking Twitter and stop and checking news.com.au every morning and stuff like that, just because I just want to live in my little world of running and inside running podcast and running PB and like parenting and just like I'm just blocking all that shit out now. I'm not dealing with it anymore from here on in.
So, good. Yeah. It's a good way to be. They call it doomsday scrolling.
Yeah, I've actually made a folder on my phone with like Facebook, Instagram. Oh, they're the only two in there because they're the only like doomsday things I got. And when I click on it, like I've got to click twice into it now if I want to go check Twitter, and it just says doom scroll with a question mark. Like, is this what you're going to do, Brady? And then the whole day today I haven't checked Twitter. So I'm pretty proud of myself.
Been good today too. Twitter's been real good.
Well, I don't even know why. I follow a whole lot of running things. I'm not sure why when now I scroll, I just see a whole lot of like COVID stuff.
Algorithm.
Like, I didn't choose to follow any of you people. Why are you guys all tweeting about, other than that lady that you told me to follow, your mate? But, yeah, I'm getting stuck.
She's pretty upbeat, though. She's a good one to follow. But
I don't even want to know the numbers anymore. I don't care. Oh, I do care. Sorry, I care. But I'm like, yeah, when you get negativity, like, so often. And, like, yeah, I don't know. Just wasn't. And then that stuff in Afghanistan last week, like, do you guys watch that video of that plane trying to take off? I'm just like, fucking hell, like, what? Yeah, and then that global warming report, I'm just like, I've got to stop checking stuff. I'm getting worked up now just talking about it. Anyway.
Breathe.
I did 40 minutes on Sunday as a nice recovery day. Beautiful weather, 21 Sunday, so I've just been working in the garden. That was just true recovery. Did 153Ks for the week, 7 weeks to marathon, possibly Melbourne. Possibly not. Possibly Moama. Doing a 10K time trial in 3 weeks, though, boys. We're doing Moama, the point-to-point one. You know, the half of the half marathon course that we did last year. Me, Paddy Stowe, Archie Reid.
Downhill?
Nah, there's no hills here. Can't go downhill. Can't go downhill or uphill. Two losers have to buy the other one a slab. Go halves. So we want to make sure that Archie doesn't win because he drinks Canadian Club. Could be an expensive day for Paddy Stowe and I. Yeah.
Fucking bargain.
Yeah. So, we just got to try to beat him and we'll be right.
Paddy Stowe won't be able to afford a half a slab.
I think he's got a bit of money, Paddy Stowe. Kid from Albury, the king from Albury.
Doesn't spend it on footwear.
Yeah, doesn't he?
He wears them till they're dead. Sent me a photo of his the other day. He's like, these have 1,000 on them. They were cooked.
What were they? What kind?
The Saucony Endorphins.
Yeah, he reckons he only races in Next Percent, so only puts them on for races. So I'll see if he rocks up this time trial in them. They must be pretty fresh. Anyway, that was my week. I want to thank the Patreon supporters. Kick us off, Croaks.
All right, I've got Ryan Carley this week. Ryan lives in East London, UK. He's run 17:48 for 5K, 82 for the half, and he's maybe running the London Marathon for the Lighthouse Construction Charity. He's got a pretty locked down Strava and Instagram account, so probably he's got a really important job then. That's a good assumption, Brady.
It's the only reason you lock it down, Krugs.
But thanks for your support. Thanks for your support, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan. What about Ryan Carley? My wife's name's Carly, exactly the same spelling. My brother's name's Ryan.
Shit.
Combination of the two.
Maybe they've gone halves in a Patreon subscription and but just changed the address.
Oh, and that's why they're on private, Krugs.
Your brother listen to the podcast, Brady?
No, he doesn't even know what it is. You know, have you got any family members? They're like, yeah, you still doing that radio show? You ever see them at Christmas? He's like that. Just ask me why I run every time I see him. So, you know you can drive, it's cheaper. Easier on the body, stuff like that. Yeah, those kind of gags. You've met my brother, Moose.
I have, yeah.
Remember he was talking about buying a lawnmower from Aldi that day?
He's a much better bloke than you.
Oh, yeah, everyone tells
me. Higher quality individual, would have a beer with him 10 times before I had a beer.
Yeah. Remember when he thought Brie was Ali and Ali was Brie?
I don't remember.
He met Brie the night before, and then the next day, I think, like, Ali opened the door and he thought that was Brie. He's like, oh, yeah. How'd your race go? And Ali's like, who the hell's this guy? Anyway.
Yeah, I do now. I do. That was good.
Who are you thinking?
It happens quite often, actually. Elliot Nolan. He's from Birch Grove in New South Wales, the COVID land, land of COVID. 21:26 for 5K, 44:46 for 10, 1:42 at the Canberra Half Marathon 2021. Good work getting to that race. That race is now seeming like one of the only ones that goes ahead, isn't it, for 2021, Canberra.
And
they
Hobart.
Did real well. And Hobart, the postponed Hobart, is doing real well. Won the 2019 Most Improved Male at Woodstock Runners in Sydney. So there you go, Woodstock Runners. Where are they at?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of the Woodstock Runners before. Must be some kind of group in Sydney. Anyway, they're dishing out trophies for him. Most Improved 2019.
We love that. We love Most Improved.
Yeah, it means you're training well consistently, and then you're getting the improvements out. Well done, Elliot. Thanks to Patrick Hilly from Melbourne. He's the guy I'm taking this week. 16:37 for 5K, 39:57 for 10. He ran a 1:16 half marathon time trial around Albert Park after Gold Coast Marathon got cancelled this year, not so long ago. And he ran 3:18 at the Melbourne Marathon in 2019. So that time is well under threat when he gets into a marathon, gets onto a start line. Puts a lot of photos up of music on his Strava. He's been listening to a bit of Stormzy, Harry Styles, Calvin Harris, and Hot Chip, all making a bit of an appearance in there.
What's Hot Chip?
Hot Chip. Haven't heard of the band Hot Chip.
I've heard of it, but I don't know what it is.
Triple J band. Kind of, I'd compare them to Glass Animals a bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, they're good. They're good, aren't they?
Yep.
They do that Tokyo Drift.
Drift.
You know, with, with Denzel Curry.
Oh, do they?
Good.
Collab
one of my favourite songs. One of my favourite songs of all time, Tokyo Drift. Get on it.
No, I haven't heard that one. I've been listening to less and less radio. Like, once you get Spotify going, and then, like, once the
it's not on the radio.
Where do you hear these songs? Like Nipsey, who you were talking about the other week. Where do they come into your life from?
You just go down rabbit holes, I guess, of, like, people that are like other people on Spotify. But, I mean, Nipsey Hussle, don't you remember when he died, all the, like, celebrities were putting up tribute posts? And stuff. You obviously don't. But Denzel Curry's pretty popular. He did Raging Bulls.
Yeah, like, I know Denzel Curry.
Yeah.
He did the like a version. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but this is a popular song. Yeah. This was a really popular song.
I have to listen to it. Hey, have you got an apology plan for my Patreon comments last week as well?
Absolutely
that,
not.
That black and white dog was a Kelpie. I had
so
it correct.
It's not a Kelpie.
It was a Kelpie.
It's not
she
a
wrote
help.
In. Holy
you,
dog.
Write, you read the message.
I don't have it here. I was just waiting for your apology.
So it's black and white, which means it's not a Kelpie.
Well, was it some kind of Kelpie? Just a yes or no answer.
it may have some Kelpie in it. That doesn't mean it's a Kelpie.
Anyway, it was a Kelpie, she reckons. She's the owner of the dog. Thanks for writing in, Flo.
She
didn't
say it's a Kelpie.
Croak's good week to be a Patreon supporter, isn't it?
Yeah, we had a big week, actually, in terms of, and that was one of the positives of lockdown, was that we had a lot more free time. So we managed to interview Sinead, Pat Tin, and Jen Gregson all in the space of, 4 days. So we're pretty lucky, and so they're all up on Patreon at the moment.
Yeah, so if you sign up to Patreon at that level, you get an RSS feed. That sometimes if you follow us on social media, you'll see like the yellow Patreon kind of image. And then that's where all these episodes sit. So they'll be all coming out on like future episodes, but you can get them right now if you want to support us on Patreon as a bit of a way of thanks. Plus there's like all the Road to Nowhere stuff, Road to Valencia, Road to New York, Friends of the Show episodes that we've done. I think we worked out over 100 episodes. So if you want some runner material and you want to support the Inside Runner podcast and help us come out every single week, patreon.com/insiderunningpodcast is where you can find us. Some news, fellas. Prefontaine Classic. You watch it? Get up Sunday morning?
Taped it and then watched it when I got up.
It wasn't that late, was it? Wasn't it like 7 a.m.?
No. So I watched part of it and then because I just recorded it. So I actually, you know what? I find recording the Diamond Leagues and fast-forwarding it is so much better in terms of use of time because there's so much stuff there that I don't want to watch. Like when they cut away to somebody doing the pole vault, you know, you just basically fast forward it. So I can watch a 2-hour Diamond League in half an hour. It's awesome. But yes, I did. So I did watch the races.
Cool. I reckon if you got into some of that, you would enjoy it. I have the jumping and the throwing.
Yeah, but they don't. It's not. I don't reckon it's quite as thorough as the Olympic coverage of the jumps, though. It's a real sort of just. Oh yeah, this person's. You know, they don't show as much of it. I don't reckon. But I'm happy to watch all the running races, but a lot of the field events of Diamond Leagues, I'd prefer just to fast forward and get to the running races.
Do you want to start with the men's 1500? Because we had three Aussies in there. Not the same three from the Olympics, but two of the three. Stewie was there. Ollie Hall was there. And Matthew Ramsden was there. Fascinating race. Stewie took him a while to get going again, boys. Did you watch that off the line?
Yeah. I actually thought, because you know, his start was terrible, as always. But he didn't accelerate straight away. He sort of sat back a little bit and I thought, oh, Stewie's going to try something different here. And then like, nah, straight to the front.
Well,
and
Tim Chariot did, didn't he? Like he kind of tried something different.
Yeah. But it was a bizarre race in that I couldn't believe how much Stewie and Ingebrigtsen had just gapped the field by. You know, it was almost like there was two races going on. And Ingebrigtsen was too strong in the end. So he won in... let me just find the time, 3:47.24. So that's like a world lead, national record, Diamond League record, and a PB. Stewie was second in 3:48.4, which is just outside his Aussie record. And Tim Chariot was third in 3:51.17. So, what do you reckon is going through Stewie's head? Like, I have no doubt that if Stewie could have produced something like that at the Olympics, then he definitely would have finished higher than he did because, you know, like the way that he towered up some of those, the guys that were in the second pack, it was impressive to watch.
Yeah, it was such a big gap, as you said. Like it just grew and grew and it was at that stage where I could start yelling at the TV because I knew they weren't going to catch him and I'm like, come on, Stewie, can we kind of hold off Ingebrigtsen here and possibly kind of win it? But when Ingebrigtsen goes wide and passes... Like, can anyone catch him, boys? I don't think so. Not now.
No.
He's high as a kite after the gold medal and stuff as well.
And how much would he be loving it as well, just going, oh, yep, here's Stewie to be my pacemaker. And then, yep, 150, 200 to go. Thanks, Stewie.
Well, he does have to run these, though, meet records and, you know, Diamond League records and world leads to beat Stewie kind of thing, though. So that's one good thing.
And I think that's what makes Stewie's run so impressive is that he's largely doing this as a time trial.
Well, they did have a pace.
He's doing so much work.
Wait, how long was the pace there? Two laps? No, two and a bit. And then he nearly got in Stewie's road. He was kind of losing time and Stewie nearly took him out. Just see that coming around with 700 to go?
I'd love to know what Stewie's, you know, like to back up from the Olympics and have this sort of run, like how he feels about his Olympic run. which at some point I'm sure we'll get him on and have a chat to him about it. Because I'm sure he'd be disappointed with the Olympics, like considering everything else he's done this season.
I can't help thinking about the 350 mile he ran in Penguin. Like, I know I bring this up a lot, but consider that run, right? You put him running that time trial down at a local track on a Saturday arvo with a crowd of, 200 people or so, and then, you insert that run into the race we just saw, the Diamond League at the pre-classic marquee event, the mile, and with all these Olympians, Olympic silver medalists, and all of a sudden, he's still coming third, basically, in that run from a time trial down in Penguin. It's that run is going to be one of the most underrated, undervalued runs of all time, I reckon, because I can't get over that. And that would be, from his run there, half a second per lap that he's gained having a, the debuting at Hayward Field, new stadium, having a pacemaker in front of him, having Ingebrigtsen on his ass, having a crowd in front of you. Like, this is exceptional. It was exceptional what he did down in Penguin.
Yeah, good comparison. Oliver Hall was fifth in 351.63, a PB for him over the mile. And Matthew Ramsden was 11th in 353.97. So good to see three Aussies in a pretty deep field like that, fellas, because they did have the, I think they call it the international mile, but pretty much like the B-grade mile the day before. So it was good to see all the Aussie guys in this one. Mm. Women's 1500 was on as well. We got to see Lyndon Hall and Jessica Hull go around again. And this was deep as well. You had the silver and the gold medal from the Olympic final in there, Faith Kipyegon and Laura Muir. Kipyegon's bloody impressive, isn't she, fellas? The way she kind of went, and we're talking about people time trialing, she was by herself for a whole lot of that race.
Yeah, different league. She won by six and a half seconds she won by. But credit to Lyndon, she finished best of the rest in second place, 359.73. So, beat the Olympic silver medalist. And then Josette Norris was third in 4 minutes, 0.07. Our other Aussie, Jess Hull, not a great day for Jess, 11th in 405.33.
She was there though, wasn't she? She put herself in a good position again. But do you think it's you look at Muir though as well though, like are people just getting tired? Long seasons, a lot of stress with travelling and stuff. Like we're seeing a bit of a range now in what people are putting out.
Yeah, and it's always been the way after like a major championships, particularly Olympics, people either go to maybe a new level if they're sort of on the up going into the Olympics, or they've put everything physically and emotionally into the Olympics and they're sort of just hanging on for a little bit too long. So I guess it depends sort of where you're at. And I'd imagine it'd be hard for some people to get up. Like if you've won, like Mule, for example, like you've come second at the Olympics, you put probably so much pressure on yourself. Like you're going to have this down period, I reckon. I guess it all comes down to the individual athletes and what their goals are and how driven they are for the rest of the season.
A lot of the big Nike athletes have the pre-classic written into their contract as well. And having a meet written into your contract means that you have to run it to satisfy the requirements of the relationship. So a lot of these people will be here without really wanting to be here. It won't match their season, and they probably ended their season in Tokyo, but they've just got to tack this one on at the end. So the motivation's a little lower. They're sort of already finished their season mentally and physically as well. So they just go around, get around in a moderate time, and collect their contract or tick that box.
Is that why Kipchoge was there in the crowds and stuff?
He would be there exactly for that. Same reason why Chariot probably saw the pace go out and go, fuck that, I'm not interested, I'm here for a tick in a box.
Yeah. Must be especially with Kipchoge, he goes away to his camp, away from his, wife and kids and stuff, and then he goes and wins the gold, and then he's still got to stay away from home to go do these kind of things. I'm sure it's financially rewarding, very much so, but they've been away for a while, some of these guys, if you think about their prep into Tokyo, and now they're still doing this after Tokyo.
Anyway. Yeah, I guess it's their job, though. And, the very best in the world, they don't like the greats, they tend not to balance their life too well.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. It's more about 100% goes into their career and their dedication to their craft. Like, yeah, they might not see their family. I actually don't think that would probably be a big priority for a lot of them. I'm not saying that these runners are thinking like that. I'm just saying, like, you look at the very, very best, they're very one track minded to greatness rather than trying to balance, like you said, family life and all that.
Mm. Safwan Hassan had a go at the world record in the 5K, but missed it. She ran 14:27, missed it by a bit there. I think you watched that, Croak. She went out pretty hard, then faded.
Oh, I just was getting live splits.
That's right. So, this was on the Friday night, wasn't it? No footage.
Yeah. So she was on 14:10 pace through 3K and then faded pretty bad. Yeah. So the last 2K wasn't very impressive at all. But I guess she had a crack, but wasn't to be.
Cheptegei won the men's 2 mile. This was a great race. Joshua Cheptegei won in 8:09:55. Salomon Berega, the Olympic 10,000 meter champ, he was second in 8:09. Don't see Berega get beaten, 8:09.8. Don't see him get beaten in a kick finish that often, but Cheptegei put him to the sword pretty well. Paul Chelimo, 8:09.83. So that was a cool finish. I did love Cheptegei coming across the line, like beating at his chest. He calls himself the Silverback or something, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Thinks that's his nickname?
I think what Cheptegei did well was not really leave it to the straight. Like, he sort of gapped. He gapped them so it almost took Braga's kick out of it. So it probably looks a bit closer on the times than it actually was, like, because he did have a decent gap there.
Oh yeah, you know, he was easing up straight, celebrating, and they ran in the back of him over the line. Did you see that?
Yeah. So I don't know about you guys, but I struggle to really get excited about 2 miles. This is, like, I guess because we just don't run them here, and like, unless somebody, like, if somebody was going to break Komen's, I know Komen's 2 mile record is like unbelievable. So I'd probably be excited if I saw somebody break that record. But in terms of the 2 mile, it sort of doesn't mean a lot to me. I don't know about you boys.
I just remember it from Mottram running.
Oh, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I just want to know what time he ran when he was there.
8:03.
So 6 seconds ahead of Cheptegei.
Incredible run, and probably the hardest Australian record to break of all time.
Yeah, that was 2007. That puts it in. That's, I was just about to say, Croaks. That's the only thing I can relate it to, because I remember that as well.
Yeah, and isn't the world record like 7:58 or something like that? Like two sub 4 minute miles back to back. Like, it's amazing.
Well, it must be the closest an Australian's got to a distance running world record.
Well, what do you mean?
Like, to be within 5 seconds of it.
Except for the ones that broke the world record.
Well, Stewie. Stewie's within how many seconds?
Oh, yeah, 1,500. Yeah, well, it's a bit different over the shorter distance. Think about the difference I'm saying, yeah, look at the Australian record for 5K and the world record for 5K. Look at the 3K, 3K, 10K, 10K, half marathon.
Yeah, you're right. That the 2 miles probably the closest.
What's the world 3K record?
Oh, it's 8:20. 720, yeah. Komen as well, right?
Okay, so Stewie might be close to within, if it's 720. Yeah. Anyway, that was a good observation. There was the women's 2 mile as well. Francine Neobassa, she won it. She took down G'day. G'day was second, 9 minutes to 9:06 to Helen Obiri from Kenya in third, 9:14. This is the athlete, guys, that has, I don't think, wouldn't call them dreadlocks, maybe the braids. The Bourne Braids, we saw her at the, I think it was the 5K. Know the athlete I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think she ran the 10 as well, but she ran the last, I think she finished second at the last Olympics in the 800, but wasn't able to compete in the 800 due to those new testosterone rules.
Yep.
So had to move up in distance.
She was DQ'd in the 5 at the Olympics too, I believe.
That's right. Yep. And I think she was pretty like protesting against her federation not appealing it.
And she ran quite well in the 10. She finished in the top few, I think under 31.
No minutes for that. Name to watch there. Let's go domestically. Hey, Moose, tell us about the Adelaide Marathon.
Yeah, well, that got up, so that was nice. Probably only there's no one from New South Wales or Victoria there. Not sure about Queensland, but it would have been we had a few athletes training for it. So shame we couldn't have sent over a contingency from Victoria. Went out pretty fast actually. So the Jacob Cox won it in the male in 2:22, and Tara Palm with us, the ladies' winner, 2:51. Say it's more of a tempo for Tara. So that's pretty good marathoning there. It's a pretty hilly course, a lot of curves in it, I think. So not ideal for a fast race. Jacob's debut marathon, I believe. Tara's run marathons before, hasn't she?
No, debut as well, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
See that photo of her foot?
Yeah.
She's got a real bad blister.
She did it in heavy shoes as well. She wasn't in a racing shoe. That's what made me think it was more like a tempo. And given her 10K and her running pedigree, 2:51 wouldn't be that satisfying for Tara, I don't think. But she's had some injuries. Yeah, she had some injuries. Half marathon, Bryn Nichols, 69:55. Belinda Richardson, 1:22:03. And in the 10K, Isaac Hayne, 29:53. Caitlin Adams, 33:01. So the run of the day there, I'd say Caitlin Adams, 33:01. Perhaps Jacob, 2:22. I don't know. Good to see one get underway and get finished, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bit of a weird feeling for the rest of us. Well, Perth's got one coming up in about, 8 weeks, 9 weeks, 2 weeks after Melbourne's meant to be, I think. So they might get a go over there in the west.
Yeah.
And then Sunny popping up.
Sunny Coast will go. That's the same day as Melbourne. So hopefully they stay safe up there and they only get, and they'll probably just get Queensland people, maybe Western Australians and South Australians. Anyone from not from ACT, New South Wales or Victoria. But, yeah, Sunny Coast is probably the safest next one as well, isn't it?
Do you reckon Athletics Australia put one on in the new year?
Oh, I would love it because I think we're going to need one because really there's nothing fast in Australia now after Melbourne until, what? Like Hobart's not fast enough, I don't think. We've sort of seen that. It gets windy there.
Canberra's at altitude and not that fast.
Canberra's not that fast. Like there needs to be a fast run in the Australian late summer or early autumn.
Yeah, I agree. Give people opportunity to hit some times to do the world champs and Comm Games. See what happens there. Kenenisa Bekele, he's put his name down to run at not only Berlin Marathon, but also New York City Marathon. That's kind of good this time of the year, seeing all these names pop up for the elite marathon season. That's pretty packed because a few races have had to move from April, March to September, October, November. So he'll have 42 days between the two races, fellas. Be the first time since 2004 that he will not be introduced on the start line as the world record holder in the 5K and the 10,000 metres. He was quoted to saying, "I still feel that I am the best and better than anyone," Bekele said in an interview last Tuesday morning.
That. How good's that?
I think every athlete and others should think like that. So, yeah.
This guy sounds like Moose when he's not doing real well. Hey guys, I'm still the best.
Love Bekele. Channel your Bekele. Everybody should channel their Bekele. Just get up and about. Just start throwing out banter like that. Like Kipchoge sitting at home going, "What Kenny says he's the best." Well, after what I've done.
Thoughts on him being entered in both of these 42 days apart? Do you think that he's going to end up in the gutter on one of these races?
Yeah, or both.
No, I'm going to back him.
Strike rate at marathons is so low.
Isn't it a shame, though, that, like, his legacy, you know, for what he's done on the track, he's now just becoming sort of remembered for the guy that doesn't finish marathons or, you know, you see in the gutter, which is a shame.
Compare that to Haile Gebrselassie, right? He sort of went out, like, he didn't, once he had a bad one or maybe two, he's gone, done. Like, he doesn't need it. Obviously, Bekele's sort of, he's either A, got nothing going on at home, and he doesn't have businesses and stuff, like maybe some other retired runners, or he actually does believe that he can go out there and pull it off. And it's only 2 years since he ran that 2:01.
But he's not going to pull both of these off. Like, he's not going to run well at both of these. So
no, but he's going to get paid for both of these.
Yeah, but then it's always at what point do the meet organizers sort of see through it and go, oh yeah, okay, he's a big name, but we've seen him in the gutter at this marathon. Let's throw money somewhere else.
Well, do you think that's why he's not doing London? Because he would have, remember last year when it was meant to be him versus Kipchoge and he pulled out 2 days before? Do you reckon he's got a tick next to his name there? They're not having him back?
So I wonder if potentially he's using Berlin as a session before New York. Like, you know, or just having a bit of an insurance plan that, you know, if Berlin doesn't go well, he'll pull the pin there and then have a crack at New York. Guess time will tell.
Going to be fascinating to watch. This episode of the Inside Running Podcast is sponsored by New Balance, helping athletes find their better. The New Balance Vongo Version 5 is the brand's latest running innovation within the Fresh Foam X collection, combining plush comfort with premium stability. With a breathable hypo-knit upper, precision-engineered Fresh Foam midsole, and medial post, the Vongo version 5 delivers an ultra cushioned lightweight ride with the stability in every stride. Deep flex grooves and a more robust underfoot experience help keep the foot moving efficiently.
That's all I've got for news this week, fellas. Listen to question, Croaks. They're both kind of around the same topic, this one, so I put two in for you. You want to have a go at summarizing them both together?
They're sort of slightly different. Well, the first one comes in from Simon, and it's basically the benefits of doing the session in the morning and an easy run in the afternoon versus doing it the other way around. So it would be interesting to hear your thoughts in relation to session quality, the feel, heart rate, sleep quality, recovery, sore knee and tight hips in the morning, and other physiological pros and cons. So, so basically, what would you prefer to do? You know, in terms of, would you prefer to do the session in the morning, easy run in the afternoon, or the other way around? Oh. So that's the first one. That's the first question. And the second one was in regards to if you want to add doubles to your program, what day of the week would you do it? Would you do it on your hard days or on your recovery days? And that one comes in from August Stephenson. And he wrote here that you're my favorite podcast, and that says a lot given that I'm a fan, given I'm from Norway and still follow Jared Clifford on Strava. So they're the two questions sort of molded together.
It's funny, where Christian's podcast, he's our favorite still. We're his favorite.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Christian.
He's moving to Ballarat soon, you reckon, so Christian, coming over. Need to open the border, ScoMo, let him in. we'll do the first one first, eh? What would you prefer, boys? A session in the morning, an easy run in the afternoon, or the other way around? This really depends on your life, yeah, and how old you are and how, like, all the examples are used.
My personal preference, other than the fact that if I have nothing on all day, like sitting around for the session in the afternoon sucks, but in terms of the quality, I have no doubt that the quality of my session is better in the afternoon than it is in the morning. And I generally feel like I move a lot better than I do in the morning. But the downside of the afternoon sessions, especially in summer when it's hot and if it's a hard session, I definitely struggle to sleep that night. So that's one of the downsides. But in terms of how I feel running, afternoon session for me.
Yeah, me too. My heart rate's lower in the afternoon, without a doubt, than in the morning. So my sessions tend to go better, especially if they're heart rate based. And I do feel better. Like, I feel like during the day that I develop a little bit more movement through my muscles and my joints. Like, I feel more flexible, or whatever it is that old people warm up during the day. I don't know. Definitely when I'm older, I'm feeling like the afternoon runs are easier. But it also works into extra recovery. So on a Tuesday, like he's mentioned, he didn't mention that, but say it's a Tuesday, doing it in the morning means that you're only 48 hours after your long run, whereas if you do the session in the afternoon, you give yourself an extra sort of 10 hours to recover, and that can make a difference between how you feel as well. But this is more a life decision. If you're a professional runner, they can, like, they'll do it at say 9:30 after they get up and they have a few hours to get moving because they can. And I think that's sort of the more popular way to do it is the mornings. Like you said, Brad, it's not real fun just sit around all day, yeah, knowing that it's easier to eat a bigger meal after your workout and get back in that sort of like recovery routine throughout the day. And it can start affecting your sleep if you do a hard workout towards the end of the day. I know, like, I'll struggle to sleep, and my sleep quality will be less if I'm doing a workout in the arvo versus the morning.
Yeah, lifestyle reasons, I do all my workouts, or pretty much, 95% of them in the mornings, just because it's easy to get them in before work, because I don't start till 9, I've got a bit of time there. And then, I tend to look after Hudson after school most days, so it's easier then to bring him back home and go for an easy 30 minutes instead of trying to go for something that's going to maybe take me 70 or 80 or 90 minutes. But I do think, sometimes hitting certain speeds in the morning is difficult. Like, I think doing threshold stuff and kind of like tempo-y stuff's a lot easier to get done. And like, we rarely do super fast stuff because obviously we don't have a track here. If I ever do PM stuff, it's in the afternoon, so we can drive over to Shepparton and get on the track to hit those kind of paces. But sometimes, like tomorrow morning, like when my alarm goes off at 5:30, it's like, oh, how am I going to get going at 6:30? Like, you're never sure if your body's going to be fully awake by that. But I hit the massage gun, like you're being up for an hour, have a coffee, have the breakfast. It's amazing how like good you do feel, like when our sessions start, like we warm up for 25, 30 minutes, do the drills and stuff. And yeah, it's amazing how well you do cover the ground at such a early time. And I guess you're just used to it. So
Used to everything, don't you? It's part of your routine, then it becomes routine, automatic.
And I love going to work on a Tuesday knowing like I've banged my session for the morning. Yeah. I can relax the whole day. I've just got to get out for half an hour when I get home from like, work. And it's a good way to kind of, But then I say that, it's like, oh, I'd never have the energy to do a workout on a Tuesday afternoon, but I associate Tuesday afternoon from being tired because I've done a morning workout. So I'm not sure how I'd feel.
The one thing I do like about the morning sessions, as you said, Brady, is it's like it's done. And if I do a double on a session day, that feeling of going out for an afternoon 30 minutes, like after massage, the session, is so nice. Yeah. Whereas if you do it the other way around and you do the 30 minutes in the morning, you're like, oh man, I've run already once today and I've still got to do this session this afternoon. So psychologically, I much prefer getting it done and then just going, oh yeah, I've just got to go out for an easy 30 minutes this afternoon. But in terms of doing the session in the morning, I don't particularly like it.
Another good thing with the morning ones is you kind of have the brakes on early on because you can't go like that fast. Like we often might take the first rep to kind of work into things. Whereas if we do afternoon sessions on the track, like so many times we overcook it with the first rep just because we're, probably more.
Well, you do.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because you just love banging it.
Yeah. You're just like, this is how we usually start workouts at this effort. And all of a sudden you're 3 seconds up on the first 400 meter rep or whatever it is. But yeah, it holds us back doing workouts in the morning. But yeah, it really depends so much on the person's lifestyle, how old they are, how long it takes them to get going. Like, I don't know if I'd have the same answer in 5 years when I'm getting close to Kroger's age, 7 years, 9 years, whatever it is.
Yeah. And the second question, which is like, if you were trying to increase volume and you're adding doubles, when would you do it during the week? My preference would be to do it on your session days, just to make then the recovery days purely recovery. Plus, as what you said, like if you do a session in the morning, going out for an easy 30 minutes in the afternoon can sometimes flush some of that crap in your legs from the session. So that would be my preference. If I was adding volume and doing it through doubles, I would add the double on the session day.
Yeah.
The just something that is mentioned here, August. That's his name. August.
Yeah, August Stephenson. Remember when we thanked him for Patreon support because it was the same spelling as John Stephenson, his last name?
Augustus. I'm just thinking Augustus. So what I'm thinking is if he's mentioned here that, where is it? I've been ending up feeling a bit stiff after the double days. It probably means that you're like, it's too much stress, that double, for you at the moment, because the idea of a double, the second run should not be to add all this stress where you start pulling up sore from. It should be that you're helping recover, like Brad said, with getting rid of the shit out of your legs, getting some circulation going, clearing some lactate from the morning's workout or the day before's workout. So don't just add that. That is when junk comes into it. When you're doing a run, but you're not hitting the purpose of the run, that's the term of, like, that's the definition of junk mileage for me. If you're sort of a little bit tired, you're beat up, and you add a double just for the sake without really wondering why, and you're running it a little fast, and it's sort of contributing more to a regression in your development more than a progression. So that's, maybe you're running it a little fast, maybe you're running it a little hilly, or maybe it's just not required at that time. But I agree with Brad. I would like to keep doubles on the hard days. So if you keep your hard days hard and your easy days really easy, that means that you can recover properly on the day after you run hard for a workout, and then you add the double in. So that's how I look at it. It's the same sort of concept behind doing a harder gym workout on your, after your session, is because it means you've got a longer and a more quality recovery period afterwards before your next hard day.
Yeah, I'd agree with everything you
said. I think what you're also getting at there, Moose, is with the whole adding doubles and increasing the mileage, like, you've got to ask yourself, like, yeah, why are you adding more mileage? Like, have you hit your ceiling in terms of improvement? Because he says here that he runs 100K a week and he wants to run 120. Like, you could potentially still keep improving off 100K a week. It's, you know, you probably only need to start increasing mileage when you start to plateau. So, you know, the fact that if you're saying you're stiff and sore after doing doubles, then maybe 100Ks is enough.
Yeah, that's going to start affecting your workouts. Your performance will drop, that kind of thing. More risk of injury.
Because more is not always better.
Yeah, or add Ks in other ways. Like, can you add 4 or 3K to your medium long run and not do that double the day before? Something like that. It's hard to know without seeing his program. Moose on the Loose, purchase of the week.
Well, I don't have it. Oh, Moose on the Loose. Gee, I've been a bit testy lately. What have I been testy about? Have I argued with you guys about anything?
Hey, you've been pretty good.
I was just
going
to say, Moose, that we agree with each other a bit more than we used to back in episode 50. Something's off there. Because a few times you're like, oh yeah, I agree with Brad. I'm like, oh.
Even yesterday when he said, he's like, oh, I'll do an interview, boys. I'll interview Genevieve Lacaz for you. And I was like, shit, nearly fell off my seat. Who's doing a bit of work?
Hey.
No.
I'm the man behind Shoe Geeks, the most popular spin-off on this podcast. So don't...
Well, we don't have too many spin-offs.
The only spin-off that gets released to the public.
Oh, gee.
Yeah, what's been annoying you, though?
I mean, there's things that have been annoying me that I'm probably not going to talk about on the podcast. I don't really.
Okay. Tell us off air.
Yeah. Oh, no, not
week, Moose. Actually, I've got a question on purchase of the Loose. I noticed today on Facebook that you're looking to buy a blood lactate tester. Talk us through this. Have you been inspired by the Ingebrigtsens?
Well, not at all, really. It's just, we prescribe, like, as a coach, we prescribe threshold workouts and easy days. And I would, like, so I want to progress my knowledge and experience as a coach, especially given that my athletic career is going downhill and the transition to coaching is becoming a more real reality. And so I want to become more knowledgeable, and I want to know, like, little intricacies a little bit more in depth. And this is just something that I wanted to experiment with and play with, because I think it will help a general overall coaching knowledge. And I want to use it on some people, myself, just to get a bit of a gauge as to whether prescribing heart rate for easy days at, like, the aerobic threshold is is going to be easy to do using heart rate and after they undergo like a lactate profile test and then finding a more specific threshold zone for heart rate work like that. I think that's it. Like, I wouldn't change how I program an athlete, but I would just be a little bit more accurate in my prescriptions around the workouts and the easy days, I think. So I see benefit in it, and they're the only two things I would use it for. Like, I know some people use it during training where they do an interval and they take a lactate test and they say, oh, no, you're working too hard, slow it down or whatever. Like, that's definitely not what I'm about. But, yeah, it's more about training prescription rather than training monitoring.
I think it's also good to – because, you know, we use this threshold, like, real loose in terms of it's roughly this effort or, you know, this pace potentially if it's, you know – in a controllable environment, but you can sometimes get away from that. Whereas if you did a couple of sessions where you got to that 4 millimole or whatever, and you're like, oh, okay, so it almost reminds you exactly how it should feel. Whereas sometimes you can get away from that feel in training. You're like, oh no, I'm in that zone, but then you're actually not. Whereas if you test it every now and then, you go, okay, this is I'm running too hard or I'm not running hard enough.
As a coach as well, who's not in person with some of your athletes, you don't really know what that threshold is looking like. And everybody has different heart rates. So for me to look at someone and go, oh, yeah, you ran 182, that's too high. Well, it might not be too high for them. So you're guessing to a degree without actually seeing the athlete run the workout. The data that you're seeing is only relative to that individual, and you don't really know that without some more conclusive testing as to sort of how that heart rate sits. So like, obviously pace is one small indicator, and you can run a threshold at 10K pace like you've suggested I have, Brad, but it doesn't mean that it's an actual threshold. So yeah, just it's I think it would just be you'd just be more confident, I think, in your coaching to say, hey, this is the heart rate you need to be at for this workout.
Yeah.
So where do you get one of these?
They're bloody expensive.
They are.
Well, it's not even so much the unit. Like, the units are probably $300. But
no, they're not. They're more. The good ones are more, like, $750.
And even the strips, you're looking at, what, $2-3 each time you do one?
More.
Yeah.
So 25 strips for the one that I'm looking at, it's like $140 for the pack for 25. And you use, like, 4 or 5 for a test.
Yeah, like a step test.
Yeah, step test. Yep.
Jeez.
So it's expensive. Which
did anyone reply to you saying they got one for sale?
Oh, just clowns. Just clowns like Tony Lockyer telling me that he's got plenty, but he won't sell me. He doesn't even know what the thing is. So I'm going to delete that post because that's just embarrassing right now. And I'm just going to, well, I'm just, Ali, so we're going to get one for the business, but Ali, she's just working out whether she sees value in it, so whether she lets me get it or not. If not, then I'll buy it and I'll just use it for myself.
My whole day was just at work, and I just get a notification saying Brad Croker has tagged you in a post on Facebook, and I'm like, beautiful, this would be something good. That's exactly what it was. Anyway,
I thought my comment about getting Christian to infiltrate Team Ingebrigtsen instead of dealing with Canova was the good one, where he could get in there and knock off a couple of those lactate pros.
Yeah, I didn't know they were that expensive.
Surely someone works at a uni where you can just pinch one and send it to me. I would definitely be pinching these things if I worked at a uni.
Even. Anyway, what's going up, Croaks? What are you doing between now and next week?
Yeah, not much. Another week of, well, we've got another, what, 10 days, 11 days of lockdown. But yeah, just another week of jogging.
Will you guys get out of lockdown?
I don't know. Like, our cases are sitting at around 16, or between 16 and 20 each day. So, while ever it stays at that, we won't get out of lockdown. But really, while ever stuff's happening up in Sydney, we're so close to Sydney that we're in trouble anyway. But yeah, I think we might be doing a bonus show Wednesday, Brady.
Yeah, yeah. That's good thing about being locked down. We can do plenty of Patreon bonus shows.
Yeah.
We might try and get someone on the phone like we did with Sinead last week, or do some listener questions or something.
Mm. Yeah, we're pretty lucky. We're pretty lucky to be able to interview some of these athletes. Like, sort of pinch yourself sometimes, just, you know, realising
how
lucky you are.
Brad was pretty bloody good. Did you listen to those two we did, Moose? He should be a journalist. I reckon we I reckon we just make like a fake like LinkedIn account or something for you, Croaks.
The guy needs a job, surely. You can't be a fucking temporary teacher your whole life.
Well, believe it or not, I said this to you boys, but I get pretty nervous before them. And so like I make sure that I don't know, like I prepare really thoroughly because I think the more prepared I am for it, the less nervous I am. But like if you told me when I started running that I'd be in a position to sit down with Olympians and Australian record holders and be able to chat to them one-on-one for 90 minutes, like there's no way I would have believed it. So I definitely feel very privileged to be able to do it. So, yeah. And like, and while you're doing it, you never know whether it's any good or not. So thanks for those people that wrote in.
The feedback we got for the Sinead one was really heartwarming. Because you get off, and remember you messaged me, like, was that good? I'm like, I think so. I don't know. Like,
well, you don't know because you while you're doing it, you're so just into the
conversation
and then thinking about what you're going to ask them next that you don't really know how it comes across as a whole package. But it also helps, like, the athletes that we've got on last week, like, they're so open and honest, and that makes your life so much easier.
Yeah, well, so we'll do something like that. Moose, what do you got coming up?
Well, I'm in lockdown down in Anglesey. Surgery appointment on Wednesday, so I'll let you know how that goes. And hopefully I can run a bit more this week because I might do a session on Friday.
There's a Lausanne Diamond League. That's on 26th of August. I haven't seen start list for that yet, but hopefully there's some Australians there. And still four Diamond Leagues to go after that. Paralympics is kicking off this week as well. Next week's going to be our 200th episode, fellas. You were just telling me off air, Moose, that 200 means nothing. I was up and about thinking I was pretty proud we made it 200, but then you just cut me straight down.
No, I said no one cares about 200
episodes. I care that we've survived and got to 200 episodes.
Is that a benchmark
it's
amount?
It's a significant number, isn't it? There's way more than 200 episodes because we've done like different shows and stuff. There's more than 200 uploads.
Yeah, but if you go once a week, 200's nothing. 200's what, like four and something years?
That's a lot of consistency. It's going to be 4 years.
Yeah, it's going to be 4 years. We started pretty much just after Berlin 2017. So that was like October. October 2017.
I reckon that's a more significant than just a random number like 200.
You think 4 years is?
4 years, yeah. The yearly anniversary is more significant than just a number.
Imagine the amount of hours we've spent doing this stuff. Jeez.
Yeah, too many.
Imagine what I could have been doing with my life.
Too many hours. I could have written.
You love it, Brady. You love it.
Yeah.
I don't love it. No, I don't know. You were just talking about how impressed you are with these interviewees, Croaks. You sound like you're up and about. Oh, I'm proud that we've got to 200. Well, I just started with a little bit of an idea.
We haven't. Like,
yeah, true. True. I was thinking about retiring at 200 as well and bringing Nick Earl in, but I kind of put that idea on the back burner a bit. Anyway, listeners.
You know where he'll go? He'll go well on inside jogging.
Oh, you reckon? Trust.
Send him over there because they have 12 listeners, and that's where
and
he
then
does
put
his best.
Clousy on Road to Nowhere.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that could be a good idea.
I don't mind that.
Joel, Clousy, and Ali.
That would actually be quite good. I reckon Clousy would get up for that.
Ali actually told me at Launceston when I was there that she likes listening to Clousy as well when he was on Road to Valencia. So they could work good together.
Got to get rid of those boring fucksies around and get him on our show. Because with the right people
we should bring
around
him on Wednesday, Croaks. We'll ring Clousy. See what he's doing.
He just ran 63
minutes. Middle of the night, won't it?
See that?
Yeah,
he just ran 63.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's a pretty good runner, Clousy. He's doing Berlin in a couple of weeks. We'll definitely get him. We'll call him 1 week, Croaks. We've got four more weeks while these Road to Nowhere people are away to call people.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be too impressed if we call him at, what's going to be, like 3 a.m?
Sometimes he gets up at 4 a.m. to go running. Anyway, I'm talking too much about Clousy. Hey, listeners, though, if you like what we've done in the first 200 episodes, bang us an iTunes review. We'll read some out on air next week. Only make them interesting, though, funny. Give us 5 stars. And then we'll read our favourites out next week in the 200th episode.
Make
5 stars and then rip into us in the comments. Like, tell us some of your highlights the first 200 episodes. Interview fellas, Jared Clifford. They would have heard the promo with him last week about the Paralympics. This is like a bit of an interview we did beforehand. It was the same day, so the introduction is going to sound exactly the same as last week, but then this is a bit of a chat about his training. We talked about like some of the para funding in there, the recovery and the like, build up for the marathon that he accidentally ran, and then his hopes going into the Paralympics for the 1500, the 5K, and the marathon. He's in action on August 28th. August 31st, and then September the 5th with Michael Roger for the marathon. So I hope you enjoy this one. And then we'll do it all again next week, fellas. Anything else I need to say before we're done?
No, have a good week.
Same to you.
Enjoy lockdown life.
Talk to you Wednesday, Croaks. Yeah, get on that Apple Plus. Get on Ted Lasso. I've been telling you about this for a few weeks now.
I got plenty of Netflix shows.
Ah, but they're not the same quality. Have you got Apple Plus, Moose?
I don't even know what that is.
It's just like the Apple's version of Netflix.
Apple version of Netflix. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's good. There's some good TV shows on there.
You know what movie I watched last night?
Oh, what'd you watch?
Romeo Must Die.
Is it good?
It's one of my... I named my first dog. You know my Twitter handle or my Instagram handle?
Yeah, Romeo the Moose.
Yeah, come after my dog, which I named after Romeo Must Die, which was the movie I was watching, which was like... It's got DMX in it, Jet Li.
Oh, yeah.
It's got Aaliyah. Do you know Aaliyah?
No.
She died.
Do you know what movie we watched on the weekend?
Oh, yeah, I do, actually, because you're asking about it.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't one of those two. We had two options, but we steered away from that. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. You seen that?
Oh, yeah. That's crazy, that movie.
That's a great movie, isn't it?
That's a Tarantino flick,
right? Yeah, that was a really good movie. I quite enjoyed that. Listeners, if you haven't seen that one, have a look at that one. See you next week.
See
you guys.
All right, welcome back to the Inside Running Podcast. This is a friend of the show. He's been on before, episode 114, Jared Clifford. Welcome to the Inside Running Podcast. Welcome back to the Inside Running Podcast.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me back. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Episode 114, that was a while ago as well, but listeners would have heard you on episode 147 when you were a guest interviewer of Noel Thatcher.
Yeah, Noel Thatcher is one of the legends of Paralympic distance running, and definitely one of the reasons why this next couple of minutes is going to be pretty epic. He's like the forefigure of Paralympic running, and I think that's the reason why Paralympic running's in a really good place globally.
Yeah, and whereabouts are you joining us from today?
I'm in Cairns, and it's 2 weeks today that we're talking until my race in Tokyo, and a week till we leave.
Your first race in Tokyo, of potentially four.
Potentially four, which is going to be crazy, but I think I'm ready for it.
I looked at the schedule this morning. We'll jump straight into it, and then we'll go back and talk about some things that you've been doing the past 6-12 months. But August 28th, your first race is the 5K straight final. I've got that right?
Straight final, yeah.
Okay, and then the 30th, so 2 days later, you got a 1,500-meter heat.
Yeah, and the heats sometimes get cancelled depending on which countries bring the athletes that have qualified.
I was going to ask that. So when you had the world champs a couple of years ago in Dubai, wasn't it? Did you have heats then, or was that a straight final?
Yeah, straight final. The last time they had heats in Paralympics and stuff like that was London 2012, and they basically make the qualifiers hard enough so that they don't always need heats, just because there's obviously so many events at the Paralympic Games, and just to limit the number of people in the village.
Yeah, right.
So we'll see. We're not sure yet. I don't know when we find out.
Yeah, about to ask when you'd find out, because that could really change, I guess, because the final's the day after, the 31st.
Yeah, 31st.
And that's strange as well, isn't it, that you'd have a final the day after the heat? Because wasn't the Olympics just gone, like Stewie and that had a couple of days between their 1,500?
Yeah, I was talking to the cerebral palsy guys in our team, and Dion and Dan Bounty, and they were saying how it's funny the Olympic guys had a day off in between their heat and final, but the para athletes, we don't need a day off.
maybe because they went heat, semi, then final.
I think so, yeah. I think that is why.
Yeah, that, maybe that could be, I don't know. These schedules, I don't know how people, it would do my head in trying to make all this work. It takes a special human being to do this job.
I think so.
And then after the 1,500-meter final, you'll have 4 days off, and on the fifth day, you'll run the marathon, September the 5th.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I know definitely wasn't on my plan until Penrith when I ran the one by accident, but the 4 days off will actually mean that it's an easier week leading into this one than the one in Penrith. So hopefully I'll feel a little bit fresher on the start line.
Yeah, I don't mind this program. I reckon you can pull off this triple.
I think it's doable. The 5K is my best event, even though I'm not the world record holder in that one. It's just the one that I'm probably strongest at the moment, and there's probably less variables. And in the 1500, there's a lot of guys coming up from the 800 with some really fast PBs. So if it gets down to the last lap, there's a lot more that could happen. So I think the way it's set out is, you know, hopefully tick the box in the 5K, which sets up the rest of the comp.
And will you be a guy that will like take a lot of confidence from that as well? Like you bang a gold straight out in the first event and then you're on a cloud for the rest of it?
Oh, I think so. I've been in the high performance system longer than most people, particularly in distance running. I entered the high performance system at Athletics Australia when I was 12. And basically my entire career has been leading up to Tokyo. I remember sitting in an office when I was 14 or 15 and being told that I'd been, quote, earmarked for Tokyo. So basically ticking that box is ticking off, you know, the biggest thing in my whole life, a gold medal at a Paralympic Games. Honestly, whatever happens after that, if I can do that in the 5K, is just a bonus, because it would just mean so much. And once I've ticked that box off, it nearly feels like I'll be able to take a deep breath and, like, I'll have a new lease on life, just because everything's been geared towards this moment. So it'll be like a massive weight off the shoulders to tick off the box early.
And with that 5K, like 2 weeks out, how's the competition looking, do you know?
It's going to be strong. And this is the thing with Paralympic running that a lot of people are astounded by. I've raced my competitors in the 5,000 metres once since Rio 5 years ago. I haven't seen results from my African rivals in 2 years. There will be people on the start list, probably from Ethiopia and Kenya, whose names have never popped up on world rankings lists, who have no result to their name that I can find. And I'll probably be standing on the start line not actually knowing if I'm the quickest. I've run 14.04 and 14.02 in recent weeks in pretty much, not solo particularly, but time trials. No one else is racing the race, and I'm pretty confident I'm in some pretty crazy 5K shape at the moment. So that's why I'm most confident for the 5, because if it's fast, I believe I can go with it, and then I know my last lap's strong. The best, the rivals that I know most, Elamine Chentou from Morocco. He's run a 13:53 before. He's the world record holder, but the way he ran that race, you know, he went out really hard, so he's probably a 13:35 type guy. Whether he's in that form still, that was quite a while ago now. But Kenya's super strong, Morocco's super strong, Tunisia and Russia. So it's Paralympics running is so unpredictable.
It's interesting though, because we sit back, and when I say we, I mean like, you know, followers of Athletics Australia and listen to this podcast, almost assuming that you're going to come home with a couple of gold medals, like, because we don't know any of these other athletes, or you're kind of like, you know, Australia's favourite para athlete in a way, like, and there must be a lot of pressure on you, like, because you know all these, what you just said then, like, these guys that are in sub 14 shape and guys you've never heard of before that come from strong distance running countries, but we don't. We just assume that you're going to go over there and win gold medals.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of pressure, and that's why I like coming on shows like this when I know the distance running community is listening and they'll understand once I say it, because definitely the gold medal isn't a guarantee. World champs at para-athletic level is quite strong, but it is nowhere near as strong as Paralympic level, because a lot of the African countries will actually send their strongest runners to the Paralympic Games. Paralympic sport in a lot of those countries is only just beginning to go through a massive surge. And they actually bother looking for people with visual impairments in Kenya, you know, leading up to a Paralympic Games. Basically no gold is a guarantee. And I know that from firsthand experience watching my training partner, Michael Rogo, in the arm amputee 1500 meters. He's been the world record holder since 2013, 2014. And he's moved to the marathon now. He's never won a 1500 meter global title, world champs or Paralympic Games. So world records don't matter. To be honest, even in my 1500 time, the guys that I'm coming up against in that, there's a chance they've run quicker than me, and I just haven't found out. The world record hasn't gone public, or they've kept it quiet. Like, that is possible in Paralympic sport.
And why is it that they support the Olympics so much more than like the World Parachamps or the Paralympics more than the Parachamps?
I think this is why, if you think about it, Paralympic Games, they really started in 1964. And to be honest, it was probably a similar starting point to 1896, the Olympic Games, because there was only a handful of countries. A lot of the people that were competing wouldn't call themselves professional athletes that were training full time. And since 1964, what's that? That's like 50-ish years.
Yeah.
50 years on from the start of the Olympic Games, the representation around the world was growing, but definitely the African dominance in distance running didn't quite get going until I think the 60s or 70s. So I think Paralympic sport is probably at that point. It's a lot of countries are only just starting to debut at the Paralympic Games. Kenya and Ethiopia have been there for a long time, but the strength is and the depth that they're beginning to show now. For instance, in my category, the 1500 meters and 5000 meters, an African runner has won every time since Sydney 2000. So to say that they're not to say that they're coming strong now is actually, I guess, a disservice because they've always been dominant, but it's just the depth that's changed.
Yeah, okay. And then I'm assuming this depth would continue over into the marathon, like your last event?
Yeah, the marathon's super, super strong. I got the world record, but often, in Australia, we have the ability to ratify world records a lot easier. And a lot of the times that have been put down in the marathon are done at the London Marathon, where the para athletes get their own race. And it's, often there's no paces or anything like that. Or they're done at Paralympic Games when it's quite hot usually and not the best conditions. So there's a couple of guys that are running low 220s, a couple of Japanese fellas that are running potentially sub 220. So the marathon's going to be quite difficult. And obviously for me, the goal is just to survive it. I'm not training for it specifically. I'm just trying to, fluke it again. But but honestly, that's a thing. I think I can. The way I felt in that marathon in Paris, which I guess we'll get to later, I feel like I could do it. So it's going to be full on.
Yeah, well, let's go there now. So you run the Tan, the race around the Tan Botanical Gardens in Melbourne the day before. You then fly up to Sydney for the Athletics Australia kind of marathon to pace your good mate and training partner Michael Roger. And then you end up finishing after a bit of a sit down after your pacemaker duties were done. You run 2:19.08, which is, a phenomenal time. I don't think you had many gels or drinks or anything like that. You didn't put in any long runs or anything beforehand. And then you bang out a time like that. Amazing.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. I think, coming off the track season, it was a really good track season for me. I ran 3:41, 1500 meters, which is
ran 9 1500 meters during the season. Every single time there was a race on, I saw you going around on my stream back here in the Chukamala.
I threw myself in every race. Honestly, I was in a weird headspace. I'd probably done a couple of weeks before, I'd probably only run 40 or 50 k's a week just because my pa, who I was really close to, had passed away. It's what happens, I guess. He was someone that always rang me about my running, and I think mentally I was just in a weird spot as we closed off that season. It was nearly not like I was being reckless or anything, but I think I was trying to work out what parts of running I love the most, and my squad is like a family to me. And Philo, the way he creates this atmosphere is that we'd do anything to help others in our team, and if we win together and we lose together. And when Rogues, this marathon, I've seen what he's put himself through over the last decade, and I want to see him do well in Tokyo, and I knew this was a big race for him, and I was pretty ready to go to the ends of the earth to try and get him as far as possible. But the week leading in was weird. I did national 1500, did okay.
You got through the
final. I missed the final .2.
That's right. You're coming down the home straight, closing really hard, dipping.
I was trying. I've come fourth in my heat twice, but And then I did uni nationals, and then I did not much running. Then I did the Tan in Melbourne, which was a great event put on by the guys there that we've now got para records, para all timers, so shout out to them. But yeah, then travelled up to Sydney, and yeah, it all happened. It was crazy day.
So what was the plan beforehand though? Like, was the conversation to get to half or get to 25 or 30, or like, did you, in the back of your mind, did you ever think you were going to go the whole way?
I didn't know I was going to go the whole way, and I can swear on my life on this until Philo told me to finish. I actually sat on my bed that morning and like talked to myself and said to myself, like, I have to like bury myself to get to halfway, because I hadn't done any long sessions, no long run. I think I'd done like one 30K run in January maybe. My weeks were averaging about 100 to 105, 110 maybe. So I was honestly worried I wouldn't even make it that far. In terms of nutrition, I had a gel on the start, and then I probably had one sip of Morton when Philo, because I can't see my bottles. Like, even if I had bottles, like, I wouldn't have been able to see them. So I was basically just, if Philo gave me a drink at like 15K, and we were just running, I think, 3:15s, and it's 5K laps at that course, and for me visually it was like the best course because it was out and back, straight line. I could have closed my eyes. And then there was this one tough bit where I'd then like go behind Rogues and Nick Earl, and I'd basically just follow their feet around that and then swing back past as soon as I knew I could run freely. And yeah, it was just one of those days where, I guess, because I wasn't focusing on myself, because if I did start feeling bad, I could have just pulled out. And so I wasn't really analyzing it so in depth that I just never felt bad. And I was going to pull out at about 30, I think, because I started to think it would get a bit silly if I went further.
And you still felt okay? Like 30K at 3:15, 3:16 is pretty honest.
I felt so good. Yeah, it was the most, it's one of the best feelings I've ever had in running. It was just so rhythmic. I just was so in the zone. And I was carrying Rogues' water bottle for about a K each lap. Obviously, Rogues, with the one hand, with, you know, if he's having a gel, he can't hold his bottle at the same time. So I was helping him out with that. And then Rogue started to cramp, which he gets in a lot of marathons. And I was kind of thinking to myself, there's not much point pulling out if I'm still feeling good at the moment. He probably needs someone the most, because I guess that's when everyone says the race starts. And I was like, I'll do another lap, just to get him another 5K. And then, got to 36, which is where everyone was standing, and I sat down. I was pretty happy to be finished. Like, I was still feeling, like, real good. But, I don't know. It was also Rogues' marathon, so I didn't, it was his race. And I don't know, I thought I'd get in trouble from people at AA and stuff like that if I finished a marathon out of nowhere. So I kind of stopped and sat down for, I think it was 28 seconds on my Strava. And Philo ran over to me and basically told me to get up and even just jog, and I could break the world record. And basically, if I didn't do it, I might regret it. So I think my fastest K of the race was the next K. But sitting down definitely stuffed my stomach up. And the last 5K definitely wasn't as comfortable as the first 36. And that's why I was pretty cooked when I crossed the line, I think.
What was the world record before your 2:19?
Officially, and this is the fastest time I've managed to find, even unofficially, 2:21:30. But I reckon the guy that did that, if he didn't do it, he would have been capable of quicker. And I still reckon there could be a time out there that I haven't found. But yeah.
Yeah, the ratification of the record sounds really interesting, I suppose, in para sports.
Yeah, and that's why I promote it when I break one, because I think until the rest of the world jumps on that and values the world records properly, then this will just keep happening. And I think until we make it a really cool thing to break a world record, which we've done in Australia, then I don't think the guys around the world will care. Like, I want it to be a real thing. So that's why I get around when Rogues or myself or Dion in the past have broken world records.
Yeah, well, it gets media and stuff as well, and then it gets people talking about running and publicity and all that kind of, like, that's, you know, sometimes in Australia we've got this like tall poppy syndrome where we cut things like that down, but I think it's actually a good thing that people are talking about our sport and know what's going on, and any publicity is good kind of publicity in distance running.
That's what I reckon, and for para sport too, like, you know, it's funny, people will look at my times and think I'm one of the quickest visually impaired runners in the history of our sport. And obviously I am, because I'm a male, but the best visually impaired runner of all time is still Marla Runyon. she was a T12 athlete as well, same category as me, and she came eighth at the Sydney or Atlanta. I think it was Sydney 2000 Olympic Games. She's like a 402 or 403 1500 meter runner, and you know, we don't really know about that for some reason. And that's, you know, she's a runner that is one of the greatest runners of all time.
Visually impaired, and she was in the Olympics, and yeah, she ran 403 for 1500.
Yeah, this is what I mean. Like, yeah, people don't know these stories.
I've done 197 episodes talking about running in Australia and didn't know this at all until you just told me.
Yeah, so, well, actually, let me clarify. I might have not said. She's actually American, not Australian. Oh, but okay. It's still a story. It's still a story that, like, speaks volumes about, you know, because people see my times and sometimes their initial reaction is, well, you know, the vision impairment must not impact that badly if he's able to run 3:41. One, that comes from a pretty ignorant place. But two, my time compared to that, it's not even equivalent at all. Like, there are runners in our history, in Paralympic history, that are quick, really impressive athletes. And she's one of them. And I think stories like that and pumping up times make people realize that the Paralympics is no joke. Like, this is real competition. A gold medal, we don't get handed gold medals. Australia's won 3 gold medals, I think, in Paralympic distance running in history, and which is actually less than the Olympic Games. And I think it's just because, you know, we're in such a golden era of Australian Paralympic running with Rogues, myself, Dion, etc., that people kind of think Australia must just dominate. And that's actually not how it has been in the past. So it's super exciting, I think, leading into Tokyo.
Yeah, summarise that well. But back to this marathon, tell us about your recovery. I know we spoke about it on the podcast, and then we had a few messages with you about, we were concerned because, you know, we all know how hard it is, a marathon is on your body, and how sometimes it's hard it is to bounce back afterwards. And like, we were stoked that you ran that time, but we're also really worried that it was going to impact possibly your preparation for the Paralympics and like the big goals, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's it. Like, I think there were, you know, around the running community, there would have been queries as to Philo's decision-making to tell me to finish. But I guess 36K versus 42 is not a huge difference. But
I'd say from a guy who crumbles in the last 6K most marathons, I would say, yeah, you give me a 36K over a 42K, and I think there is a difference. I reckon a lot of damage potentially can be done in the last 6K, but it sounds like you got up and finished it, no worries.
Yeah, I guess that's definitely – yeah, no, that is true. I think from my just purely perspective from outside the marathon, yeah, no, you're definitely right. But I think Philo's decision-making is often contextualized to the athlete. I've never had an injury in my career ever. I've been running 140 up to 150K weeks since I was 17. I'm 22 now, so it's been a pretty long uninterrupted stint, which doesn't mean you can do a marathon, but it definitely means my body has shown resilience, and I think that's how he justified knowing that I could do it. And then we backed it off, so I took 3 days off. I was definitely sore, but it wasn't as sore as I thought I could have been. And then I jogged for a few days, and then I started doing sessions with the slower athletes in our group, and Philo basically, and we were in Parrish as well, so I went to altitude within 6 or 7 days. But basically Philo was like, if I see you one step in front of whoever I'd been assigned to that day, then I'd have to take a week off. So I basically eased into it, but within, I think, less than 2 weeks, I did was it a 20-minute threshold at 3:10s at Perisher? So I was feeling pretty good afterwards, but we definitely didn't hit any speed work for quite a while. So I don't know how I managed to do it. I don't know if it's the shoes. I don't know if it's something to do with my body. Maybe the marathon's what I'm suited to down the track. I actually have no idea.
Yeah, because it didn't seem to impact much of your, like, just even the last couple of months, like a 14:04, a 14:09, and a 14:02. This 14:02 the other week, 2:48, 2:49, 2:51, 2:52, 2:39. Just a decent kick down there.
Yeah, I think that was the thing. Like, it was funny. Like, the reaction from people at Athletics Australia in the para space was very much like, congrats. Like, are we allowed to be excited about this? Because I guess there were queries whether it was high performance, but my retort to that would be, well, it was a world record, so I guess, I don't know. It's definitely a risk, and I'm not going to like say it wasn't a risk, but arguably the marathon could have been, if I was to focus on it, my safest bet of a gold medal. Obviously, I haven't done that, but it's funny how like you're either a track runner or a marathon runner, like, and the reaction was very much you can't commit to even running the marathon as a afterthought at the games until you prove that you've recovered well. And I ran a 14:04 in June as well. So I think that's when I was given the permission to go ahead with it, which yeah. is, yeah.
Your range is unbelievable. Like 3:41, 14:02. Is your best 10K still that one we did in Bendigo, that time trial? Like 29:20-ish?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And then 2:19:08. Like there's a lot of distance runners out there that would kill for those PBs to have that kind of range from 15 all the way up to the marathon. And yeah, it's all been recent, like all that's happened in the last 12 months.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think because I keep saying it's a fluke, like the marathon, but Philo says like, there's no flukes in running, I think.
Nah, and you can't fluke a marathon. Like it's 42K. You may even fluke the first 15K or 20K, but it will find you out.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm definitely going into Tokyo in terms of my thinking on the marathon. And just because I've done it once, there's no indication it means I can do it again. Obviously, Tokyo is going to be tougher conditions. This time, I'll know at the start that I'm finishing because I remember in Penrith thinking at 15K, you know, shit, we've been running a while, like stuff doing a full marathon. We're not even halfway. And obviously, yeah, I didn't realize I was in the middle of one, but now I'll know at the 15K mark that I'm still got, you know, quite a long way to go. So psychologically, it's going to be different and physically, it's going to be different. So that's why I'm just treating it as a bonus. If it goes terribly, hopefully I've executed on the track. So that's my thinking.
And at the Paralympics, will you use the same marathon course that the Olympics used up in Sapporo?
Nah, so we're in Tokyo. So everyone, if they do have a stream, at least on the app, they'll be able to see what the course would have been if the
Olympic guys had a run. Oh, so you're on the original course.
Yeah.
Is it going to be so much hotter though, or is it going to cool down a bit in 2 weeks?
Cooling down a little bit, but not heaps. But Sapporo ended up being super hot, so it'll probably be similar conditions to that. So yeah, we finish and start and finish in the stadium, which is exciting.
And then with the marathon, this is what I sometimes get a bit confused with para sports. We might say, you know, 20, 30, I'm not sure, you'll be able to tell me, 50 people go off the start line, but you directly won't be competing against all of those guys.
Yeah, so we're still waiting to hear whether there's going to be staggered starts. They may stagger each category by 10 minutes.
Oh, because they do that at London, don't they?
Yeah, so like the para guys, we get like a half an hour start at London, I think, or something like that. And yeah, so for Rogues and I, ideally, I don't think we'll be starting at the same time. And yeah, we race our own categories. So it's the same as pretty much on the track. Like we race against people with similar disabilities to us. Which I guess, I can get into as part of a para preview later on. But, yeah, it's basically you're just racing. And, yeah, I won't be looking at running the time or anything like that.
Yeah, I think we saw that last weekend, didn't we, with the Olympics. You're not going to, unless you're Kipchoge. He's about the only one that put down a super fast time over there.
Yeah, well, we actually spoke. Philo's really good mates with Michael Shelley.
Yep.
So Rogues and I had a sit-down chat over the phone with Shelley and just kind of spoke about running in the heat and running to feel and just like backing yourself and being confident and not having any doubts and just kind of nearly feeling like you're just going for a long run that first few Ks, like on the start line, like don't hype yourself too much, especially when it's like so important not to go out too hard. So to hear from, you know, a legend like Shelley has run quite a few hot marathons was pretty special.
And you must have taken a lot from last weekend as well, like seeing how the girls in particular on the Saturday kind of their race strategies and how that panned out for them.
Yeah, definitely. Like I think that's I've taken a lot seeing like how those girls were, and Liam especially too. Like I think it shows, and particularly me when I have to protect myself a lot more than someone that's trained for the marathon, it just shows that good results come from patience at the start. So I'm definitely going to try and be as patient as possible.
What about this build-up? So you've been a busy man. I sent you through a screenshot the other day. I was just getting the stream ready to watch some, I think it was the 1500 meter heats at work. A little logged on to the Channel 7 website, little pop-up ad pops up, and it's a picture of you and Tim Logan all dressed up in a Nike promo ad. And then I'm sitting down watching the 1500 meter final on free-to-air TV, and you've got a little ad popping up there as well. So it's been a bit of media behind you.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's definitely out of my comfort zone in a lot of ways, but it's also something that I've wanted to see for so long. And I've seen it with people like Kurt Fearnley and Dylan Alcott. But Paralympic sport has so much story in it, but so much spectacle just as a normal Olympic competition has. And I think for corporate businesses to tap into that, it's silly not to. Honestly, I approached Nike a couple of years ago and they jumped on board straight away. But to get to this point where they're super invested now in the Paralympic movement, not just through me, but through others, is super special. And, the ads are crazy. And to have Timmy, I think people will watch me running solo on the track and they probably don't get a grasp of my impairment. But Timmy and I are basically inseparable for the last almost 10 years because for me, I can't train often without using him as a cue for safety even just daily living skills off the track, off running. He's traveling around Australia and traveling around the world with me and to have him in that ad with me is super special because when I think people with low vision understand the reliance on others and that idea of being vulnerable, which we spoke about, I have to trust him. I have to trust others with my life often. So it's the bond between myself and him is incredible. And it's actually unfortunate, but Timmy's had a few injuries and he won't be able to guide me in the 5,000 meters, which he's done in the past. I'm having to do that solo just because I can do it solo, guiding in that is usually more tactical and information, but he's just not quite in the shape we need, but for the marathon he'll be all good to go. And the guide there is Vincent Donadieu, and I think I'm stoked that guide runners are getting such a good rap too, because they're I can't train at the level I want to train at without people like Tim. So it's pretty special.
Yeah, and I know, obviously knowing Tim from years of AV kind of cross-country stuff and track stuff, it was cool to see his face popping up in the promos as well and all dressed up there. And you guys just look like you're having so much fun. Every photo's just smiling. I don't know about the clothing choices. Clearly you guys didn't pick that stuff out yourself, did you?
No, we didn't.
Dressed up in, like...
We were standing there sometimes and we were geez, I hope we don't cop too much flack for some of this.
What about, it looks like you're in a dressing gown at one stage, but then with a pair of Alpha Flies on. I'm just
these are cool people.
Yeah, a cup of tea there too.
Yeah, it was interesting, but it was pretty cool. They hired out some mansion, went into a recording studio, had a massive film crew down at our local track in Greensboro in Melbourne, Diamond Valley. So it was pretty special. And they painted up this portrait of the track that we've trained at since 2013, so that's super special too.
Yeah, it's cool to hear that behind the scenes stuff as well, because we see this 60 minute TV ad and you see five photos and then you're it takes a stack of people and effort to kind of put this kind of quality of stuff out.
Oh yeah, it's crazy just to see that, the photos took hours and then there's only they pick out half a dozen. It's insane.
What about the old the Spotify playlist as well? I listened to that the other day.
Insane.
Do you guys choose the tracks? It's got different tracks, but then in between every fourth or fifth song, it's got an audio bit of you guys talking about stuff.
Yeah, that was a request kind of by me, because in the vision impaired community, there's a massive push at the moment to have voiceover in ads. And voiceover in even films, but that you can click on the TV to choose. And I think the ABC is doing it so that there's they're describing what's on the screen as well as the audio. And that's why the ad has me talking in it. But then I also kind of floated the idea of having some kind of audio storytelling as well. And so Spotify jumped on board, which was super cool. And basically, that's why there's like some really cool sound effects. So they had like these sound, like people that literally specialize in sound, just like following us around for ages and picking up background noise. But yeah, then we recorded that stuff and the tracks, to be honest, I didn't choose them, but I'm pretty happy.
I was about to give you credit for that.
I know, I probably should have just pretended that. Yeah. I'm pretty stoked with it, actually.
There was a bit of, yeah, well, I was stoked. I got some here because I've written some of the bangers down. So Northeast Party House was there, Rufus Du Sol, a bit of Cub Sport, a bit of Birds. It was good. I was saving some to my playlist. I was like, yes, Jared and Tim, this is good. But now,
yeah, I can't claim it.
Yeah, you should definitely be claiming that for now. And we might edit that out, make it sound a bit more hip than you are. So that's been good. And that's, yeah, obviously that promo and stuff around the Parasports is pretty important. And one of my last questions for you before we kind of do preview the Paralympics, which is going to be kicking off next week, is around that word vulnerability. Like everything I kind of read in some of the media have done recently, I know Hugh Van Kylenberg's often talking about vulnerability, Brené Brown kind of thing, but it definitely seems like it's a bit of a theme you've adapted in the last kind of 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, my story in a nutshell is basically, you know, I have a visual impairment, but for me it's normal. Like this is how I've grown up, but you still know you're different. And when I was a kid, like, and I think most people will understand this feeling, is that you don't want to stand out, you don't want to be different. And like for me, that led to, not for very long, but like there were moments where I didn't really embrace who I was, I guess, even at points like being ashamed. Like it's a strong word, I definitely didn't feel like it like relentlessly, but there were moments like that. And this idea of asking for help was a sign of weakness, was definitely something that I guess subscribed to as a kid. And that's why I struggled to function at school properly, just because I was rebelling against offers of help, like literally technological help, personal assistant help that would like allow me to do school properly and then also not be tired, so that I could then do sport as well. So, you know, I didn't ask for help. And the idea of vulnerability is that being vulnerable and actually accepting and embracing that, because everyone has vulnerabilities and everyone has adversities. That idea is then that once you accept that, you can actually ask for help. And asking for help is a sign of strength because, you know, Eliud Kipchoge says this in a different way, but it's like the team, like people united and people working together is so much stronger than one person. And like, I know lots of people with disabilities, particularly my community with visual impairments and blindness, our reliance on others is huge, and like our safety, but also our quality of life, our ability to not just do one thing and then be cooked for the rest of the day relies on and help from others. And until we accept that we are vulnerable in some contexts, then I don't think we'll get the best out of life like that. And I think that lesson applies so easily to everyone's life, because no one's life's easy. There's like shit going on in everyone's life. And I think until people kind of like ask for help and be okay with that and like not think it's a sign of weakness, then like, yeah, like so that's what society needs basically. So that's kind of where I come from. And I think like the Paralympics is a place where that lesson is shown in every sport on every day that you'll watch it on TV.
Society needs it more than ever at the moment too, with the current situation, which has been going on for like a year and a half. But and then like on the Paralympics, like how do you feel the hype's gone? Because I think when the Olympics hit, that was like a bit of hope in a lot of people's lives, you know, something you can stay up for and watch, and you're like, oh, I can't do much in my own life at the moment with all these lockdowns and restrictions and things like that. But you got to watch, you know, Australian athletes running against the best in the world every night. It felt like someone was in a final. Yeah. And then we've kind of had this week and a half, 2 week break, and now it's your turn.
Yeah, it's super exciting. I mean, one thing when the Olympics finished, you know, a lot of people, because they've been such a, I think, particularly in Australia, like a quite popular Olympics in the end, just because
I think
so many people were watching and it gave people, as you said, hope and something to cheer on, and Australia did so well. But like, you know, people were sad, like that the Olympics were finishing and, you know, what am I going to do now? And what I frothed was that people were getting on and going, well, hey, wait up a second. You don't have to wait 3 years. 2 weeks off and we go again. And I think as well that the hype, like tokenistic hype of Paralympics, is so in the past now, and it's actually like translated to reality. Like the hype is about, you know, overcoming our adversities for sure, because that's a huge part of it. But it's like the competition that you'll see, the athletes that you'll see on your TV screens, like, are going to blow your mind, not because, wow, that guy's swimming with one arm. It's because that guy's swimming with one arm really damn quick.
Yeah.
And like, you'll see it in my categories, and it's you'll see it in the distance running. You'll be there's a guy that is in the cerebral palsy coordination impairment 1500 meters. He literally has a physical disability. He's run the 1500 meters in 3 minutes and 47 seconds. Like the athletes, not just the stories, are going to be incredible. And the hype, I think, around it is just going to grow in the next week. Opening ceremony is August 24. So I'm super pumped. Like, I'm kind of sad. No, I'm not sad, because I'm pumped to compete. But in a way, like, I think this is going to be huge for Paralympics viewing. Like, the viewing experience is going to be massive.
Yeah, because so many people at home. Like, you see some of those numbers around, like, Pete Bowles, 800, and Rowan Browning's, like, 100. Like, there was something like 3.8 million Australians watching that on TV.
Yeah, I know. Like, that was insane to see those stats. And, like, globally, I think it's going to go up another notch. Like, I know London 2012 was huge for the Paralympics in terms of global audience too. And I think Tokyo is just going to be insane. Like, Tokyo's hype domestically has been, like it's huge. It's one of the first times they've done their promos have been together, and which is super, super cool too.
Yeah. Have you, I'm sure you have, but a lot of listeners might not have, but that Rising Phoenix documentary on Netflix, that does a pretty good job of explaining, like, the history of the Paralympics as well.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation to any listeners that are feeling like this 2 weeks in between the Olympics and Paralympics is going by slowly. Chuck that on one night, and it's one of the best sports documentaries you'll watch.
Yeah, some great background there. Hey, last one before we preview this stuff. I was looking at the NAS funding yesterday. A listener pointed this out to me, and hopefully you can clarify it. Hopefully it doesn't get too into numbers and stuff, but the way the Parasports has set it up compared to the able-bodied, like, it's all on the Athletics Australia website, who's at what level. But can you explain for me? So on tier one with the able body, we have one person, Kelsey Lee Barber. On tier two, we have one person, Danny Stevens. And on tier three, we have nine people, all field athletes, like throwers, jumpers.
Yep.
We have nine. And then it's not until tier four for the funding do we actually see any runners. So, like, Stewie's there, Kat Bissett's there, Sinead's there, Lyndon Hall, Pat Tin, and all the names we talk about regularly on this podcast. But in the para category, at the tier one, we've got nine people. Tier two, we've got 10. And tier three, we've got 10. So over those first three tiers, there's a massive difference in the support para athletes get compared to able-bodied athletes. Is that because it's a different pool of funding, or, like, yeah, can you explain that to me? And even for you, like, you're obviously at that gold tier, tier one, and it's, you know, you got Tim there as a guide and Philo there as a guide as well, and Rogues and some of these names we'll talk about in the preview.
Yeah, so basically para funding and able-bodied funding is separate. Para funding, I believe, is overall actually less, but our funding also predominantly from those tiers comes from DAS, which is it's like D, then AIS, and that's basically, I think, from the Sports Commission, whereas a lot of our able-bodied athletes, like, a lot of their NAS money outside of probably the medalists comes from Athletics Australia. So para funding, because obviously we're in para athletics, like, it's inevitable that probably we'll win more medals. We have more events as well. Yeah, basically the government, I believe with the Sports Commission and all that, value a Paralympic gold medal equally to an Olympic gold medal in terms of funding. And, yeah, but then our thing, like, if you get top eight in a Paralympic Games, there's no guarantee you'll have any financial support. You might get, like, institute support, whereas a top eight at an Olympic Games will guarantee you should guarantee funding. I'm pretty certain
on the able-bodied side. You mean
on the able-bodied side? Sorry, yeah. So even though we're concentrated at the top, our funding doesn't go deeper. Like the able-bodied funding goes to
because you look at like tier 6, 7, 8, 9 kind of thing. There's a whole lot more able-bodied athletes there than para ones. Yeah, I thought that it's kind of like a like a flip almost. Like the para athletes are way more at the top on that those first three tiers, but then the able-bodied ones, there's hardly anyone on those top three tiers.
Yeah, and that's basically because I was told as a junior when I was on my first few teams, because I've been on teams since I was 16 in 2015.
Yeah,
and like that's our junior pathway as well, where our junior pathway is being on the team, just probably not meddling. So, pretty much every para junior that's at the level to get funding is actually probably already in those upper tiers. So like they're getting their development through that. In terms of the guides, they're mainly there, but they mainly get like institute support so they can get physio if they're injured. Like Tim's been supported quite well through his injuries, for instance. Yeah.
So you at Gold you don't get exactly the same as what Tim or Philo gets as a guide at Gold.
Yeah, they don't get the same as me.
Okay. Because the listener that pointed that out, they're like, you know, here's a guide on three levels higher than what Stewie, Sinead, and Pat are on.
Yeah.
And I don't think that'd be right. But I said, I'll ask Clifford when I'm talking to him next week.
Yeah, and they definitely get supported because, like, even if I'm not racing with guides on the track, like, I genuinely need, like, if Philo, this is the thing, Philo's strength as a para coach when he comes over on teams with us is that he can run with us.
Yeah.
But say if Philo gets injured and he's 45 soon, like, or he stops running. I don't think that'll ever happen. Yeah. Say he does. Like, I don't have someone I can then train with that can then, like, help me. So even if I'm not racing, I actually need a guide to come over with me. And so, like, their support is actually important for Australia to win a gold medal. But it's still, it's still definitely treated differently to me. But also, if you take funding away from para, it definitely... if you give funding to para, it's not taking away from able-bodied because it comes from a separate place.
Mm.
We have separate medal tallies, and medal tallies often designate funding. And so our medal tally, I don't think they get combined or anything like that.
They should do a better job. They should list that on this website because it just says Athletics Australia NAS list.
Yeah, I'm sure, like, if you go into depthy reports in the Sports Commission, you could find it.
Scroll to page 97 of some PDF.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks for clarifying that. That helped massively. All right, mate. Well, thanks for the chat. Thanks for the update. Good luck between now and getting to the start line in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to be an exciting time ahead. And, yeah, you know you've got a whole lot of fans here at the Inside Running Podcast who will be yelling at their TVs when it's go time.
And thank you, and thanks to all the listeners for the support. Every time I come on the show, like, I see the messages and it's really special. And thanks for Brady and the other guys, for what you guys are doing for the sport and the Paralympic running too. Like this preview, I reckon hopefully some people have learned some stuff and we'll be tuning in now a little bit more informed. And I know when you're informed, it's a lot more enjoyable to watch too. So
thank you again to this episode's sponsor, New Balance. With all the comfort and stability for you to run the distance, Fresh Foam X is New Balance's premium collection of their most elite Fresh Foam running shoes, which are available at select retailers and newbalance.com. I'm not afraid to